Larry here.
All right, well, let me start this meeting on Tuesday, February 19th.
9 a.m.
9 a.m. in the morning. Our general discussion present is Commissioner DeYoung, Commissioner Fowler, and I don't see Lily yet. First item is discuss Ann Basker equipment, which must be Mr. McCafferty.
Good morning, Commissioners.
Good morning.
So the packet I have in front of you was a quote that Commissioner Morgan asked me to start to investigate, upgrading and replacing some of the equipment in Ann Basker. The it's broken up into several parts, and there's a lot here. It's just a first shot. This is the company that was that did Grants Pass change in microphones and speakers in the council chambers. Same people. They're from Portland. We had another group come down from Eugene almost a year ago and still haven't given us a quote. So the environment is still very much seller-oriented as far as customer service. These people seem pretty capable, but you'll notice there's some sticker shock here. The PEG fund traditionally pays for Ann Basker's equipment. There's about $20,000 in the PEG fund for that. It grows at, I believe, $3,800 a year from the franchise agreement. So this would be, if we wanted to tackle this, this would probably be something that exceeded the PEG fund, and we'd have to find other funds for it. So if you've got a minute, I'd like to go through what this...
Do you know the balance in the PEG fund?
It's about $20,000.
So what's the last big expense that, I mean, that's been building up for years, but it, I mean, that's...
The last big expense this year was the TriCaster, which was $14,000. And that's about every 5 year purchase. That's typically the biggest thing we do. Projectors were $2,700 each. That was last year.
But if it only goes up $3,800 a year, and every 5 years, you said we have to replace it at $15,000 knock, we're...
So a couple of years ago...
We're never going to be ahead.
We're not gaining in that fund.
No, the fund was changed substantially a couple of years ago when Charter balked at paying what they were paying for
franchise.
For the, yes, and they split it into two boxes, into two containers of money, and Arthur could explain it way better than I could, but the money that goes in now just for the support of maintenance of the equipment is only $3,800 a year. We get another pot of money from Charter for the other franchise.
Okay, that's for maintenance of equipment, but do they have a pot of money for capital improvement?
Maintenance is basically capital improvement.
That's what they call it.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
So if you've got a minute to go over it, we can at least start to talk about what you would want to see. This isn't based on, this is kind of everything. So priority of the board would be my instructions to go back and fine-tune this or to go out for an RFP or anything the board would like me to do.
John, and this doesn't, I mean, we have to provide the equipment no matter what, even if we did something with Rogue Valley TV again or whatever the RVTV.
Yeah. Yeah, we haven't had RVTV for years. I'd like to propose in a different meeting that we go back to RVTV, but...
They've also asked us to... They actually are on our agenda coming up pretty quick.
Okay.
I think, or Wendy was making arrangements to get them on our agenda, because they reached out to say that, would we consider them again?
And we had gotten quotes from them as well.
But if we went with them, would we have to provide all the equipment?
Yes.
Okay,
yeah,
so we're going to face this no matter what.
Yes. So our original maintenance concept was less ambitious than this. This is different. So if we could go through it, the second page has the upgrade projectors and screens. We don't need the projectors. They would be an upgrade. The... lumen projector package is brighter than we have now, but we think we can get better performance by rewiring a little bit. Those lights are that whole row, and the ambient light that comes from that whole row doesn't need to be that way. We could rewire that so it's less on the projector screens. We can replace the projector screens themselves. They're due. They're fairly old now. They are wrinkly. They are not what they call ALR, which is ambient light rejection. This proposal has those two screens changing. They're tension screens, which means they won't wrinkle. They'll automatically roll up after use, which would have been best practices anyway. They're meant to be rolled up after each use. So we haven't gotten a lot. Well, we've actually gotten a lot of life out of them. But changing those screens is actually going to change the visibility quite
a bit. Will it improve, like, going from a regular TV to high def? Because I see people all the time trying to read what that is. And unless you're sitting right on it, and then it's fuzzy then. So
it'll improve quite a bit. The content that we put up on those screens also could be improved. We could make bigger print and probably do a little bit different job than a Word document
now,
that we use.
I'm going to ask this because I'm stupid. But
no, just educated in other
projectors
ways.
And don't agree with me. But I was over at Costco the other day, and you can buy a screen about the size of that whiteboard back there for under a grand. It's crazy, and I mean, it is ultra high def. It is not a projection thing like we have over there. Are we still sticking with projection for some reason rather than going direct to a display?
Oh, we'll get to that. It's part of the what we're going to talk about.
Okay,
right now.
Well, excuse me. I was just
Okay. No, that's completely fine.
Well, and one of the topics, too, that I brought up is that we only have screens on one side of the room. So if you're sitting on the other side, you better be farsighted because otherwise you can't see it anyhow.
So that's part of this as well.
Yeah, so. I'll stop interrupting you.
Oh, no,
that's
okay.
You.
So you can see they're looking at $21,000 for two screens and projectors. We would eliminate the projectors, renegotiate the labor and materials. We would want to coordinate this, I think, would be in our best interest to whatever the board decides to go forward with, that we do it in one shot. Because they're coming from Portland, that's drive time and overnight stays. And we could combine it with Grants Pass when they have some work that they're doing. So that would be reduced by quite a bit. Upgrade the microphones. There's an understanding the board would like to go to the same microphones that Grants Pass has. It includes 12 gooseneck mics and the bases with the buttons that you can turn off the mic and turn on the mics. It also includes...
We don't have to have the exact ones as Grants Pass. We just know that their Grants Passes are better than what you used to have. And what we have doesn't have the on-off. That was one of those. But if there's a different one you recommend that does similar...
No, if you like them, Grants Pass is very happy with them. They are reasonably priced. They're 30, 40% more than what we have now. That's probably the most economical bang for the buck that we're going to get from this proposal is to upgrade those microphones.
And we're getting 12 because we're putting them not only in Ann Basker, we're putting them somewhere else?
So it'd be 9 podium mics, and there are 3 ports in the front of the dais that allows for, at budget time, we use microphones that are on the table for finance or another board. It also allows, this includes a 4-channel receiver for 2 wireless mics to be connected to that. We use my wireless mics now, so this would be an upgrade in the wireless mic ability, along with 2 body pack transmitter mics for when someone was doing a presentation in front of the board. They would use those mics to be able to move the body pack around and get better quality. It's kind of if you're going to do wireless, this is an efficient way to make sure you have the capability going forward to do what you need to do.
Well, this looks pretty reasonable.
Exactly.
I'm just curious because I took part by phone last week, and it was quite honestly difficult to hear.
So that's part of this presentation as well.
Cool.
So that's the projector screens. My recommendation is to upgrade the screens. Leave the projectors alone, at least on that side of the room.
How long do you think the projectors will last?
Oh, we'll get another 5 years out of those projectors. Yeah, they're only a year.
Well, that takes $11,000 out of it.
Yeah.
Substantially
more, actually, I would think. Just putting the screens up, you're going to be looking at substantially less labor.
And you're going to be looking at, if you do the microphones and the screens, you're looking at about $17,000.
It's probably a good rough guess. The next category is to upgrade the audio system. I don't know if the commissioners have a hard time hearing themselves and the other commissioners when they're not speaking. But Grants
Yes,
Pass,
I can't hear them when they're not speaking.
Yes. Reverse that. So when you're not speaking. So so the design here is to provide eight speakers in the ceiling or in the dais itself so that when Commissioner 1 is speaking, Commissioner 2 can hear them well. It's an on-off type mic that would buffer any background noise so that you would better hear each other and yourself. It's kind of like a monitor in a concert. You have a monitor speaker so that you can hear how you sound. I don't know if that's an issue for the board. We would not be going with eight ceiling speakers and eight pending speakers. It would be one or the other. So if there was room in the dais, the speakers could be right there near your microphone.
And a pendant speaker is?
Is a smaller speaker that's located close to you, okay, as opposed to in the ceiling.
I have no idea how people can hear in the room itself.
I don't either. I've never sat off
that. Great.
It's not great. And I know that I can't hardly hear the people at the dais unless I'm hearing their voice.
So this project. would help quite a bit on people at the podium speaking, that you would hear them and each other.
But I'm worried that the audience also can't hear.
I've never heard that the audience, the speaker system is fairly good that's in there, the two.
The biggest problem in the audience is that when the people walk up to the dais, they don't grab that gooseneck and pull it down in front of their mouth. You get a tall person who comes up and it's way up here, and then a short person shows up and they don't, you know, they're not used to grabbing microphones and moving them around. So, you know, a better microphone or...
Yeah, the city mics solve that problem. They have great pickup in comparison to having it in the right spot of the old mics we had over there.
But so, I do think it's helpful to have us be able to hear.
Yeah.
But I probably twice a month I get people texting me from audience land that they can't hear. But that's different than this, correct? Or is that just go back to the gooseneck probably as well?
There's some of that. When I listen on YouTube, it's pretty good. Especially the last 4 weeks, it's been good. If you have heard complaints in the last 4 weeks, then I would be interested in that. The connections between the microphones and when it goes out to Charter or to YouTube, there's a lot of connecting hardware in there, and we took one of the hardware pieces out, that's the feedback blocker, out. It was actually causing issues. A year ago, we had issues with the soundboard. A channel had gone bad. So this proposal, the guts of the audio would be a large upgrade, and that's the section we're talking about right now, is to get rid of the analog audio boards, mixing boards, and go to a modern computer software-operated audio system. And that's what this is discussing here. It has the speakers for your feedback. It has a new amplifier. It has the software, the computer, basically, that would run the sound, the audio, and replace the current system that we have. Now, the current system that we have is reaching pretty much end of life. That's going to be a priority to replace. If we stay in the analog world, it will be less than this, but it'll have to be replaced anyway. And this is the modern replacement for the old analog stuff. It does include a audio recorder, which I think is of interest to the board. It would be a large upgrade in our ability to record audio and to make it available to the public. So this system would include those microphones would feed right into a recorder that could be saved and stored in a folder on our network instantly, right away. There'd be no interplay with the staff, with the BCC staff. There would be no plug-in recorder, portable recorder like we use here, and we use at Ann Basker now. I think that's a really a cost-effective expenditure of $750.
And is it is there something over here to do, or we're always going to be plugging and recording over here?
No, this is just talking over there. So this would definitely upgrade our sound. I mean, this along with the microphones would replace our infrastructure from an audio standpoint, but it's expensive. As you can see, their number is $33,000. Even if we took out the $2,000 for the speakers and kept the ceiling speakers and negotiated on the installation, we'd still be looking at a substantial hit that the PEG fund couldn't pay for. The upgrade of the cameras, we talked to them this morning. We don't need that. Our cameras are fine. They've got another 5, 6, 7 years in them. They're digital. They're pan, tilt, zoom. These would not be an upgrade, really, to our cameras.
So back up to the 8 speakers, is that upgrade every speaker in the room?
No, it's just adding new speakers. The 2 speakers that we have on the side for the audience are community speakers. Both design groups that came in and took a look at Ann Basker thought they were new enough, modern enough, and working well enough. They didn't need to be replaced.
Would they stay if you added the 8 speakers in the ceiling?
Yes, the 8 speakers in the ceiling are just for the commissioners or other board members to be able to hear themselves and the audience better.
Okay.
All right. I will come back with questions when you're done.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The last section is video switching and control system. So this would be upgrading our video system to be able to better incorporate the projectors, better add the ability to get video to a Charter and to YouTube. It is going completely away again from analog camera controls, which are a panel built in back in there, to make it in a digital computer software operated camera system. This also allows the expansion if we were to go with TVs. It would allow those TVs to show content and to broadcast over Charter and to YouTube. The additional either projector or TV is not in this bid. We talked to them about an 85-inch Samsung being on the wall on the left side of the dais as you look from the audience. That's as big as they get right now, 86-inch. It's quite a bit more money, so incrementally you pay a lot more for very little increase in size. So an 85-inch TV, part of this system, would be about $6,200. Pretty visible to about 25 feet. At 50 feet, it's still pretty small. They actually recommend not going with 4K. It would be a 4K available TV, but at 4K the font gets fairly small. So actually dumbing down the TV is actually better for the audience to be able to see it from a distance, unless you're showing 4K content, which you're not going to very often be doing. So we could look at TVs to replace our projectors. My thought was if we're expanding, going with a television was a better idea than going with a projector and screen. Both from the standpoint that it offers the ability for us to have different content on there for the audience and to actually just see how it works, to see how we like a TV.
I know that I struggle to see the screens, and I have fairly good eyesight still, but I can't imagine what the audience is trying to see from across the room if I can't see it from the dais either. And having something on the left side. The other thing that Commissioner DeYoung has mentioned is having something different than what this standard presentation is. So, like, if we needed to have the agenda up somewhere, or you had even said pictures of our county scrolling through in between, like a screensaver or something like that, and then the presentation on the other one, but just having some options for some different stuff. But
so the more expensive upgrade of the audio system, I'm sorry, video switching system would allow us to expand that so we could have different content on different displays.
Is there anything I'm sorry.
Over at Curry County, while they're in the room like this, while you're waiting, you know, they started a half an hour early, and on that screen right there, they have just a rolling thing about Curry County. It's like they're advertised. You can put on, you could have on there, one time you could have the fair has just on that department. You could have a rolling deal on their department, you know, and the same thing over there, waiting for the meeting to begin, give them a little something to watch, and go from there. I'm pretty impressed by it, and you know, it very colorful. It was very well done and very colorful. Now that we have a PIO, you know, he's pretty creative. And he could go around from department to department. You know, you could have facilities and kind of just give an outline of what facilities entails and what you're doing and so on and so forth. It was very informational. I wrote it up there on the board, by the way. I put some stuff on there for IT over the weekend. And one of them is streaming pictorial on the screen.
Is that you're wanting that in here because it says conference room?
Either one.
And ambassador?
That was in the conference room over there because I didn't go to their regular, I don't know where they have their weekly business session. You know, I have no clue if they do it in that same conference room or not. But it could be on Ambassador as well. And I, you know, it's just something to thinking outside the box that we don't do anything like that. And I think it's a missed opportunity for us to be able to kind of, you know, roll in there and see what we're doing. Kind of the fair schedule on there or something. You know, it's, I think we're missing out on a plan, on an opportunity to get our information out. At anything, you might even calm the audience down a little bit. They saw something good about Josephine County when they were coming in to complain about Josephine County. So that's just an idea, and I didn't know. And like I say, I am shopping for a TV set, so I was over at Costco. And then
did you get the 86 or the 85?
Beg your pardon?
Did you get?
I didn't. My house is limited to a 60, so I'm staying right with a 60. But you know, breaking hands and feet while I'm doing that, but I'm going to stick by my guns on the 60. But anyway, I was really just blown away about TVs. The last one we bought was just a monitor. It was just a screen. It is not a television. It's just hooks because your inbox for cable or whether it be DirecTV or whatever, that is your computer, and it goes directly just to a monitor. And it's nothing more than a monitor. It's relatively inexpensive. And versus a television that can pick up signals with rabbit ears or whatever they use for. But it was, you know, I'm not into the technology side of it in the video. Yes, certainly your deal. But, boy, I mean, some of that stuff was crystal clear. And I think that adds a degree of professionalism versus the projector. The projectors aren't that clear, I guess, are they? Or are they?
They could be better. So
these screens, decent screen, are they?
These screens will help.
Yeah.
How you frame the content's important too. A Word document is not going to be very visible if you're trying to get the whole document on there.
Right.
Visualize that on a TV screen, it wouldn't be that clear.
Right.
So that was one of my questions. I know that it was originally designed to have that cabinet at the end so members of the public can use the room and have access to the projector or whatever else. But by doing that, the range of the keyboards or the mouse go almost to the dais, about not really further. So these guys can't control it that well from this. We either need to switch it, that you guys are at the same end as that other console, or we need to give access and control to where you guys are sitting so we can more easily scroll, perhaps?
Yeah, we can set that up, no problem. I think we can do that now.
Okay. I think it's not beneficial to have someone standing up and running across the room to change screens or...
No, we wouldn't want that either.
So often it'll help when the entrance isn't right there.
I think this is all a good proposal, but I'm looking at if we add all of these up, less the camera, less the projector. I guess one kind of cancels the other one, correct? Does one of these nix out the other one? Good, better, best?
Just some of it.
Yeah, just some of it. I'm recommending we don't need the cameras. That removes 10,000 or 9,400.
Right.
Either pick the ceiling speakers or the speakers in the dais. That'll save a couple $1,000s. I think we can negotiate some of the labor. It seems, just to me off the top, fairly high. But as far as either or, Not really. These are meant to be done in separate packages. The 11,000 would come out of the projectors. We don't need new projectors. Yeah. The screens, I think, would be an upgrade. I would think they're going to need to be replaced anyway.
So do we need to make a decision between screens and camera versus monitor?
We could make that decision and just go with TVs.
I think TVs are harder to see.
I think they are too, okay. From that distance. I think the projectors and the screen will be quite a bit better.
The presentation is smaller.
Mm-hmm. Right. And as they say on island hopping and stuff, then we'll just have to cancel that one out. That's one we won't consider.
Right. Well, I do think we should consider a TV on the other side of the room, so you're kind of doing a mixed package.
Gives you some flexibility.
Well, I'd like to just look this over. I appreciate you putting all this together. I think I'd like to, you know, and just maybe calling you and saying, okay, if we just go down here, and I may need explanation because I have no what a lab group in 240 2M2 channel gallery amp is.
And I don't either, except I know it's an amplifier.
Yeah.
We did have a discussion, about a half hour discussion this morning with them, so that I could at least answer questions. And
okay. I think our audio system is poor. I think the audience doesn't hear it well. I think that we don't hear it well. And having the ability to turn the mics on and off, I hope that we consider some options. I like that we don't have to do everything that was presented, like the new cameras, because we just replaced the projectors last year, so that's a little bit of savings there. But the benefit of doing this all at once means we're not piecemealing every 2 years big things. Do it once, and then the next plan should be, what is our... how are we putting money aside for replacement in 5-10 years when we do it the next time? And it's part of equipment every department should be looking at, is what's the replacement life, not just a building or something like that, but what equipment are we going to have to be regularly maintaining, and realizing that we need to come up with a different plan, because PEG is not going to sustain.
PEG's not, their $3,800 a year is nice, but it doesn't cover anything really to speak of. So.
Yeah, because I'm coming up with $48,000 when you take away the cameras and take a choice on the screen.
So I would think you could probably get that down under $40,000 with negotiation or quotes from other vendors.
Leverage.
So, and then I guess I would ask in the process of which recommendation would be overall better for the room, the ceiling speakers or the pendant speakers, because you're not recommending both.
No.
And they're virtually the same price.
They're virtually
the same.
Yeah.
But which is going to have the overall best experience for the room hearing?
Yeah, and best look.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I didn't hear about the phone calls being addressed.
So VoIP, coincidentally, was part of... I mean, we've rarely had commissioners call in, but the VoIP interface is included in the upgrade of audio system, has a VoIP interface card. So that means by moving to a computer, the phone number would actually be part of the audio system. It's for $400. It's a good expenditure. You'd be able to call in and hear. You'd actually be part of the audio system.
Be part of the system and not a phone.
Not a phone over a microphone.
It would be great if we could do something like a go-to meeting or Google Meetings or something that we can see the rooms. What I ended up doing is watching the live stream on my phone while calling in on my work phone, and the sound is delayed a bit on the live stream, but at least I could kind of see within a few minutes when somebody was up there. The other question I had was, I forgot. Oh, at the dais, at some point, an option to see on a computer at the dais the projection of the PowerPoint or something else like that.
So that wasn't part of the bid. It is something we talked to them about, the ability to put monitors, small monitors, at each, at least of the three commissioners, so that you could see what's on the screen. But, I mean, you have laptops now. I'm not sure how that would work into, if that's a requirement of the board. But we could certainly ask about that.
Well, and they can always be emailed to us, and we can pull it up.
You're way beyond this old man's learning curve, so you keep on talking.
Okay, sorry.
It's basically just putting this on the disc.
It's not turned on.
Yeah. Just for looks. It's not on this side of it.
It's got the screen protector scrolling.
Yeah, screen protector.
I thought we had rules about the public speaking.
Gee, that's pretty odd. I don't know where that is.
Well, yeah, and if that can solve the problem, then I wouldn't want to spend the money on a monitor or a screen out there in front of us somewhere.
I can certainly get a price so the board can see how much that would cost.
I don't know that it's necessary. I know. I mean, because like Planning Commission, works. Do they all have
It's need to have or nice to have.
And if the board wants me to, I can start to look at getting content up on the screen right away and the projectors and see how that looks.
Okay.
Something I can, we can start to get some video together. We should be going that route anyway.
Yeah.
Is there a way to prioritize of we needs and would not be nice to haves?
So, as Commissioner DeYoung said, take a minute to take some time to look at it.
Uh-huh.
I can tell you that from an IT perspective, the priorities were as laid out. My understanding is the board definitely wants to upgrade the microphones. So that's kind of an easy change. The cameras is not a priority. The upgrading the audio system is. So the microphones and the audio system, my understanding from what I'm hearing, is the number one priority. And then to look at the video, whether or not we can afford the video.
Yeah, the screen upgrade.
Yeah. Oh, so the projector screen upgrade, I'm recommending that we definitely do that.
Yeah.
Can you just bring us back, you know, condense all three of these, and what, after, did we give you enough information today that you can say, okay, this is what I'm hearing from you, and this is what I would recommend into a one-pager?
I can actually do
we
that.
Can, yeah. Then we can just say, you know, give us a week so we're not doing it more than once, and let's take a little time to digest this as commissioners, and we'll say, these are the things that, for instance, Commissioner Morgan's interested in something that I don't even know how to spell it. So, you know, just put together and then...
I'm not asking for TVs on the dais.
Get it to him. Well, no, I mean, there's other things that you've mentioned that are beyond my comprehension.
The calling in for voice.
So just, the calling in part and everything. So let's just put all that down and get it to John. And then he
and
can...
And then the TV.
And then he can come back with a one pager and say, this fills the bill, I think, for everybody.
Yeah.
I think I can do that.
And then we can thumbs up, thumbs down on that.
It might be that we just need to have, instead of monitors at the dais, the ability to have plugged into the network or electricity. If we have, you know, granted we have Wi-Fi, we can get on, but Wi-Fi is not always consistent in there. And the upgrades that the courts were doing with the fiber to the building, is that improve any access for better access to the network for us?
Yes, we don't use that currently. It was set up primarily for them, but yes, that would give us fiber from the Justice Building to Anbaska.
And so that might be something different, just running line through the dais.
Typically, we check the wireless. Typically, we get more than 40 up and 20 down, 40 down, 20 up. It would absolutely make it more consistent to be on Ethernet as opposed to wireless. And we could certainly put that in. Mm-hmm.
Well, I appreciate you getting back to us. I know we've been talking about it over a year, and it's definitely one of those things that I think at some point we're going to have to bite the bullet and just figure out how to do it, and then come up with a plan of the replacement thing. So,
it's part of the professionalism of a good organization to present yourself well, and it's not quite there. You know?
So I'll work on the one pager, and I did to the RVT proposition. I would like to be involved when they come to talk about that. We've grown. The county has gone from 312 employees to something like 460 employees and contractors, and it's become a big chunk of our work to deal with Ann Basker's meetings, and we think the quality will improve with real professionals that deal with sound all the time. And if it's economical to add our RVT service back to that, we can avoid hiring people at IT. So it would be my recommendation that we look at that would be a good use of kind of funds.
And it sounded like it also short-circuited our presentation so that it's digitally stored and digitally available without people having to make it happen.
The audio portion, yes.
Right.
Well, another thing RBTV would do is it makes them, they have to keep up with state-of-the-art. Instead of us chasing that rainbow every 3 or 4 years, they have to upgrade their stuff. Sure, they charge us for that. But rather than us coming back in 6 or 7 years saying, you know, Wi-Fi is no longer available, or you know, whatever you call it, is no longer there. It's now we get it. I'm carrying around a satellite in my back pocket.
Someday.
And someday it'll happen. I mean, it's... They had to use a phone at the hospital the other day, and I went, what's this? The lady went, what? Just speak into it. And I says, huh, amazing. How long you had one of these? She's a long time. She was my age, so we were laughing back and forth. They still use the phone at Rogue Valley Medical Center.
All right.
Sounds good.
So we'll get back next week. Next up is our airport's quarterly update.
Thank you very much, John.
John, I need to ask you a following up real quick. Morning.
I don't know what Step I expected, up. But that wasn't it.
Good morning. How's everybody?
Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
You look nice today.
Yeah.
You bought new clothes now that you're a new
well, you. Know,
new
I
you.
I'm part of a group that's going to have lunch with... I didn't do this for you guys. No, just,
is it picture
day? Yeah, I got lots of things going on today. So part of a group that's going to have lunch with the president of Pacific Power today. So I'm going to be hitting them
tell
up.
The president,
for
put on the dog hello.
A little bit, yeah.
I'll see you then.
Yeah, there you go. So, hopefully we can... convince them that what we're doing is good with this youth STEM CTE, you know, activity we have going on at the airport. So, anyway, I can catch Lily up here as required, but just trying to hit the highlights of what's going on at the airports. And last week at the State Aviation Board meeting on Tuesday in Salem, the State Aviation Board recommended that we receive three core grants from the Oregon Department of Aviation. And they are matching funds for two FAA grants, one of which we already have and we're already spending money on, so we're getting that grant just kind of in the nick of time to help pay for our match. And that's for the Master Plan Airport Layout Plan update that's underway. And Dan, you've Mr. Commissioner,
just the GP Airport. Yeah,
That's the Master Plan Airport Layout Plan for GP Airport, and Commissioner DeYoung's part of the Planning Advisory Committee on that. Matching funds for Grant 12 or for Grant 9, which is a future grant we're going to receive this year from the FAA for the Illinois Valley Airport. And the FAA always does these things in two or three steps, and so this will be step one for the runway rehabilitation. They do an environmental assessment, and then they do a 30% engineering design, or they do them simultaneously so that the environmentalists know what's going to be affected and where they need to look, you know, for their work, you know, looking for endangered, threatened species and things like that.
When they do that runway rehab, isn't it a matter of spraying down some sort of a emulsion or something on it? What do they do?
Well, that's there's lots of different layers or levels. That's what you're talking about is a fog seal or a seal coat.
Yeah.
But typically at an airport, what they'll do in order to preserve the surface of the runway, if the base of the runway has integrity, and you know they're usually 12 to 18 inches thick. I mean, they go down and they put in rock and gravel and compact it to 100%. Then they put in.
Yeah, this isn't building highways.
No. I mean, this is freeway quality work when you're putting in a brand new runway. But they're trying to maintain and preserve the integrity of the existing runway, which is starting to break down at the Illinois Valley Airport. I mean, we've got some big areas of what we call alligatoring in the asphalt. There's some subsidence in the base. So they're going to probably...
They can just repave that?
No. We restriped it as part of the airport electrical upgrade. Okay. And we had to dig some trenches across the runway, and at that, we took an opportunity with the runway construction opened up like that. It's like surgery, you know. you go in and look around, make sure everything else is okay. And we could see some areas of, you know, I mean, landfill and all kinds of other bizarre stuff that shouldn't be there, but it is, you know, it's what it is. So they'll be taking down at least several inches of asphalt for this rehabilitation. And the engineering design will take into account the geologics of the runway, and they'll send a survey crew out there, and they'll be taking plugs about every 100 feet all along the whole part of the, you know, both sides of the runway all the way its full length, just to characterize the base and, you know, how mushy is it, you know, that kind of stuff. And then that will help them design their construction, which will be a separate grant, probably Grant 10, coming along in another year or so. And so anyway, we got a matching grant for that, even though we haven't gotten the grant yet, and we anticipate it going to be happening later this year. And
if they give you a matching grant, it almost says that somewhere along the line the grant's in the weeds.
Yeah, the process with the FAA grants is complicated, and it's Byzantine, and it's not easily learned, and then they change it every year, so that keeps everybody hopping. But the bottom line is that they have a 5-year rolling capital improvement plan for each airport in the country that receives federal funding. So if you don't get your project in at the top of this plan, it's not gonna filter down each year and finally hit, you know, the grant in year 5. So you have to, you know, you have to plan these things way in advance and make sure you got it all in there. And sometimes the FAA will insert a grant at the last moment that you never, you know, it's on your list of things you need at the airport, but they have not allowed it to be in that 5-year list, or for whatever reason, someone else can't execute on their grant, and now they've got money that they need to allocate, or they can allocate. And so if you stay on friendly terms with them and keep them apprised of the situation at all, every turn, twist and turn, mm-hmm. They're likely to just pop up. And we got this $500,000 grant to do the master plan out at Grants Pass Airport in that way. And because the deadline for the core grant applications was 2 weeks before the grant was actually given to us by the FAA, CORE being the state program, FAA AIP grant is a federal program, I never put in an application for a matching grant for the master plan grant because it wasn't on the CIP. And I'd been advocating for it to be on the CIP, but it's not there, so you can't. And then suddenly it's there. Boom, $500,000. So now I'm on the hook for $50,000 or so, matching grant. And so scrambled, and I tried to catch up last year. They wouldn't let me in, so I got my grant in early, the application or the request. And last week they awarded that. But we've already spent $30,000 or $40,000 on this grant, and I can't go back and pull money in if it's already been spent. So we're missing out on a little bit, but we're going to get part of that
match.
Part of it, yeah, we get part of it at least. So.
And it's not because we didn't do something. It was just the way the the dominoes fell.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I've had a lot of discussions with the folks who administer the CORE grant program for the state, Oregon Department of Aviation. The CORE is the Critical Oregon Airport Resource Program. They have, you know, acronyms for everything in aviation. And we've talked about coordinating the schedule for the grant applications so that it matches up with the federal schedule of giving out the grants so that we can anticipate, you know, what we need a matching grant for. Because that's the primary purpose of the CORE grants. That's their number one priority, is to provide match money for small rural airports that don't have a lot of money. And if you can't show that you have match money, they won't give you the grant.
Right.
So it's a little bit of a balancing act, I guess, to make all that happen. So we have two matching grants, one for a grant that is already in progress and another one for a grant that we anticipate receiving. And, you know, it's not the end of the world if we don't get the grant. As far as the CORE grant is, we give the money back and they reallocate it to another high-priority project that didn't get funded the first time around. And then the resiliency study for the Grants Pass Airport. This is something that I've been requesting every year for several years, and it's an interesting conundrum. We were just barely mentioned in the county's emergency operations plan, as well as the state emergency operations plan, and somebody had to make a decision a long time ago about, well, where do we draw the line? You know, where do we spend money to study these airports and make sure they're ready to support us in a Cascadia, you know, whatever? Okay, anything west of I-5, we're just going to write it off. Well,
yeah, but Mother Nature's going to know.
I can throw a rock and hit I-5, but I'm on the west side of it, so, you know, we're out of luck there. So this is a grant that the Oregon Department of Aviation, as opposed to OEM or ODOT, has given us, and it's about a $75,000 grant in order to perform a resiliency study and make sure that we can be ready to support the area here.
Do we have an existing seismic study of our airports to see if they'll buckle and twist? Of course, I guess you don't know that.
Yeah, you can sort of tell what's going to happen, but no, we don't have anything that's recent.
There's no structures that they generally do.
Yeah. I mean, my own personal experience, I've been standing on an airport ramp when we had a pretty sizable earthquake down in San Jose at the Bay Area. I was on the ramp at the Reed Hillview Airport, and I was looking down 3,500 feet of concrete, and it looked like a bowl of Jell-O. It was just going like this. It was just,
I've seen those pictures of
amazing.
The bridges,
yeah.
Bridges going like this.
Movement.
And no cracks.
In that something?
No damage. So that was about a, I don't know, 6-point-something earthquake, that pretty standard fare for the Bay Area.
We don't have a 6,000-foot runway anymore, but we have 12 helicopter
pads. Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. So to the serious point about that is that these airports will be an excellent transportation node for helicopters no matter what happens to the runway. Fixed wing might not be able to use them, but we'll be able to bring helicopters in and the Type 1, you know, air cranes and S-61s, et cetera, they can carry, you know, 15 or 25,000 pounds of stuff, you know, so they'll be bringing in pallets of water and diapers and food and everything else, you know, and then they'll be airlifting injured people out, and the airport's a perfect location for that. I had a meeting with Sarah Rubrick and Hillary Ring, or I think her assistant, I forget her name, but anyway, just last week, when I got back from Salem, and we talked about the role of the airports and filling out, you know, if you look at the emergency operations plan for the county, the transportation portion and the airports portion is this page left blank, you know. So we're going to fill that out.
Yeah, I was going to say, let's put something in.
And I need to get some input into the county's transportation system plan. I've been invited to do that, and just, you know, as fast as I can go, and I haven't been able to catch up with that. So the master plan update's well underway. Our next public meeting will be in May to discuss chapters 3, 4, 5, and 6, I think it is, of this 8-chapter plan. Southern Oregon Air Academy lease, there's been a lot of questions. The Southern Oregon Air Academy board has been hesitant to jump into it because they've got to come up with this, you know, money for maintenance. Yep. They're trying to figure out where that's coming from.
Along that line, Ryan Johnson and I, we had a discussion about their cost of operation out there and whatnot. So yeah, we've got a time, we're trying to get, it won't be this week, but it'll have to be next week now, but we're going to go out there and just do a walkthrough, you know, like for their HVAC system. But yeah, like I explained to two gentlemen that was in the office, when you walk away and leave a building fallow, everything, all the requirement dumps onto the heating system to keep it warm.
Yeah.
So that's why it looks like the heating system is running far more than it normally should. Yeah, but we're not there. Yeah, that's the key. You're not there.
Right.
Because you do produce some heat. So
yeah.
Anyway, we had a good discussion. So Ryan and I have had that on our list to do. But
well, I've told the board, just as a matter of advice from some old guy who runs airports that and gets grants all the time, that their homework is go out and get money. Go out and find that money that you need to fulfill your requirement on the lease, you know, to put away money for the maintenance fund. And
electric utility bills are what they are, unless you want to change the way you heat that building, and you can't afford to do that either.
Right, right.
You know, you don't spend $35,000 to save $100 a month. This doesn't pencil.
And you're probably one of the better people around to go out and help them figure out what they need to do to make their HVAC efficient. Yeah. Okay.
Well, Ryan and I are on that.
Good. Yeah.
Sorry, buddy. At least he's here this time.
Yeah, that's right. And by the way, it's not on here, but it's a minor highlight. We've had three bathrooms at the center of the airport in the terminal building and over in the maintenance facility that were designed and built in the 50s or early 60s. And I think that was the last time they were cleaned, even. You know, I mean, they're just terrible. They had little 28-inch wide doors and just silly stuff, you know. The mechanics were using one, and they had a utility sink that was just, it used to be white. Anyway, I called, when I heard about the issues we were having with ADA compliance, I called Ryan, and I said, hey, we've got three, you know, bathrooms out here that need attention. And he sent his contractor out, and those guys were phenomenal. I think his name was John. Ryan, anyway,
yep.
They came out and they went through those three bathrooms like a tornado in about a month and just tore them out completely, demoed everything, jackhammered the slabs and put in new septic lines and the whole nine yards. And we have two ADA compliant bathrooms now and then a third bathroom, which is completely upgraded and it's amazing. So now it's almost a pleasure to wander in there. And so, you know, for our,
still cool,
our
though.
Transient, yeah, exactly. So that was great. So thank you.
Do we need to put a Wi-Fi jack in there?
No, but no cameras, no TV screens. It's okay. Yeah. Maybe a little music, mood music or something.
Scrolling.
And so I think Wally has the Southern Oregon Air Academy lease ready for those guys to sign. They had some final issues they were concerned about, and I think they're ready to sign it and then take occupancy later this year sometime. And I think they want to make sure they've got money in the bank and it's coming in before they say, okay, let's start the clock. You know, so they're waiting on that, my understanding anyway, and they could tell you better. The Smoke Jumpers, as we all know, have purchased all their museum facilities above ground from the county and the Forest Service warehouse, the old warehouse there. So fine, and now we're building a new maintenance facility at the Grants Pass Airport. So that'll serve both airports just like the Forest Service warehouse did for both airports up until recently. So that's happening. We're building a new caretaker residence at the Grants Pass Airport. At the WBS on December 19th, just about a month ago, I was given direction by the commissioners to investigate a stick-built unit, and if it was comparable in cost to these manufactured prefab homes, to go that route, and it turns out that it is. And so we're looking at a 1,000 square foot, 900 square foot, two bedroom stick built home. I think they're called Serenity Homes or something of that nature.
Valerian Home.
Yeah, they, you know,
there's a name,
but it's a complete turnkey operation, so they will have a project manager assigned. They'll pull all the permits. They'll bring in the excavators and do a slab and build the house.
I am very interested in watching this because of the conversation we have about affordable housing.
Yeah.
And there's, oh, they got to have this, and this. I'm interested
and
to see
what
this.
And you're building a house for under
$110,000 from the ground up.
Yep.
Two bedroom, one bath, 1,000 square feet.
With no dirt cost, but still.
Yep, but he's still going to be, if you had a lot and it was 50,000, you're still at 160 or below 200.
Yeah.
And he's warm and he's dry.
Right, right.
That's what I'm looking at. I'm really interested.
Well, this is deluxe. I mean, this is, I think, one of the very smallest units that this company builds, but they're. You know, they are residential, single-family residential code compliant. You know,
there's something in between a $275,000 to $300,000 home and a tiny home.
Yeah,
and this is it. This is what I think.
Very good. So yeah, we'll keep you apprised of the progress.
I might come out and take a peek at that from time to time. Let me know when they're started.
The next step on that is to have the site visit. The company will actually send out their project engineer and the contractor to do a site visit. Now we have an advantage in that we already have septic, gas, electricity, you know, it's all there. It's right there. So the hookups will be fairly minimal in cost.
Right.
And that number that you see here may actually come down as a result of their site visit. They haven't made the site visit yet, but they're just making a quote to us, turnkey.
And that's a no garage thing also.
No garage. No garage. We'll use the existing driveway parking lot area, and we'll need to improve
that.
Are
you going to remove that mobile that's there?
Oh, yeah. If you know anybody who wants a mobile, let me know.
A vintage mobile.
Vintage mobile. Yeah. The roof has good integrity. It doesn't leak. If you want a store, if you want a big tool shed on your 5 acres, or if you want to, you know, have some place to keep your herbaceous material after harvest. I don't know what, you know. Anyway, they can.
That would be
a great. And I need somebody to just send haul that to away.
Jackson County. Yeah. We'll send it over to Jackson County.
There you go.
Does it have to? Herbaceous. I mean, you might have to check with legal as far as it being declared. Whatever we do with the.
Well, if we do that, then it'll be a 6-month process to sell it.
I don't know what we legally have to do to sell it.
Yeah, I know what we have to do to sell it. We have a policy in place, actually. Yeah, we have to have.
But it's not worth.
It's not worth our time. I mean, it's. I have to pay somebody to haul it away, basically. Mm-hmm. And I'm. It'd
be nice if somebody could. If that's another person's treasure if they can come and get it.
You got it.
Yeah, and you know what? Then it's just a free deal. And
yeah, I mean, I know the policy's in place to make sure that, you know, I don't sell valuable stuff to my brother-in-law that used to belong to, you know, that. And this is going to, if I go the full legal route for abatement, say I just want to put that thing in a landfill somewhere, okay, it's going to cost $10,000. I got to get DEQ involved, and I've got to have inspections and hazmat and all kinds of stuff. And it would be great to be able to legally and fully compliant with all the regulations, et cetera.
It does have a serial number.
Sell it to somebody and have them haul it off. You
know? You've got to go through DMV on things like that.
It does have a serial number on the frame, yeah, yeah. Yeah. It was classified as a mobile home when it was originally purchased. So.
Okay.
All kinds of fun. As an airport manager, I love learning about DMV mobile home.
Okay.
Transportation just had wings.
That's right. Put wings on it.
Can I run you back to smoke jumpers? I still have
if
that.
If you have to, okay.
I've still got the new MOU.
Oh, yeah.
That they were, we've got to sign this by the end of the year. And I said, we're not going to sign that one. So we drew up another one. We're almost into March, and I haven't heard peep out of them.
Well, but we gave them until
February
28th to sign it.
Yeah,
so
28th February. Yeah.
I expect to hear on that day.
Yeah.
Yeah. At 4:45.
I would have thought they would have been in here saying, hey, let's get this show on the road.
Yeah.
Well, okay, thank you.
Yep, you bet. It's long overdue.
I saw the word smoke jumpers and that came to mind.
Yes. There were a few issues that I, just to revisit that briefly, I advised, Simon and legal at the time when I was given this thing to review on whatever the 14th of December, that our own minimum standards do not allow us to give leases longer than 20 years, and that the FAA has a vested interest in making sure that whatever happens at the airports that they have given millions of dollars to falls within their grant assurances that we have signed over and over again for these airports. So. Before I formally inform the FAA about the lease and the sale, I'm going through all this stuff, and I'm going to make sure that how I characterize all these things is correct and doesn't raise a lot of red flags with them, okay? So I'll be consulting with all of Trump's attorneys and all the best in the land, our own legal department, et cetera. So make sure that we get that right. Because, if a misstep or a misstatement and all of a sudden now
you got to pay back $2 million.
So they're auditing us, and we'll be on the hook for at least $2 million. Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's see. We've finished the Taxiway Bravo, and we've managed to close out those grants, which is an achievement. To close out a grant is almost as difficult and time-consuming as performing the construction of the project, but we've got that done, and hats off to my staff, Barbara in particular, for sticking with that stuff and pushing it all through, and she's basically my brain to keep track of all this stuff and keep it moving. And we just had our flight check a month ago by the FAA for all the new airport lighting put in at the Illinois Valley Airport, and they flew up the day before, did a survey during the daytime. They came back and flew at night, and then they did the formal investigation of all the angles of the precision approach path indicator lights and everything, and they just said, you guys are golden, perfect, you don't need to adjust anything, you got it right the first time, well done, you know. And so they issued the official notice to airmen that the lighting is all good and it's safe to use, all that jazz. Right. It won't fly you into a mountain. That's basically what they're concerned about there. Backup generators, we're using them all the time. They come on all the time. They run once a week, Monday morning at 10 o'clock, and they just do that for 20 minutes. And it's
exercise.
Yep, it's exercise, but they're coming on all the time.
Do you log that, how many times that generator needs to come on for power outages?
There's
you might bring that up today in your discussion with Pacific Power.
Yeah. Well, I called Pacific Power a couple years ago while all this was being considered for a grant, and I said, if I give you a meter number, can you tell me how many times in a year that meter has lost power? And they said, oh, yeah, that's easy. We can go back 5, 10 years, whatever you want. You know? And I said, well, just give me last year. And so they did for a meter at Grants Pass Airport and the meter at Illinois Valley, which are the meters that run the airport lighting, which means
nighttime.
Yeah, yeah, 80 times a year.
Wow.
80 times a year, there's a power failure to those meters. Okay. Now, 65 of those are for 1 second or 2 seconds or 5 seconds. You know, they're not significant. But many of them were at night, and they lasted all night long or 4 hours or whatever. So,
well, and that 15, 20 seconds doesn't mean anything to them. But if you're just about ready to touch down and the lights go out, that's pretty significant.
Yes. Yeah. Do you remember Airplane,
that movie?
Yeah. Yeah.
There was a cord in the one room.
Yeah, yeah. And you got, who is it, Lloyd Bridges or something, and he's standing there holding a big extension cord, you know, laughing hysterically. You know, the guys are on final approach and the lights are out. Yep, it's just like that when the power goes out. Now we have an automatic transfer switch that turns that generator on in a half a second, and the power's back on. It's amazing. We just received, as you know, the Regional Solutions grant, $250,000 to finish that fire suppression water pond at the airport. And the commissioner's going to be kicking in a little bit on top of that to help us get that over the hump and done. One of the things I love about that design is that the level of the pond, at some point, it's even with the irrigation canal that runs the length of the airport. Okay, so you can trench into that canal above it, run the water into the pond, and when the pond fills up, you run it back out into the trench. So
their way back into the ditch.
That's right. So that's called a maintenance or an industrial maintenance pond. I'm learning all these certified water rights expert terms of art that have to be used carefully and perfectly in order to apply.
The folks across the street issued a water right for us?
Because they haven't done it either. It's very important that they do. They're interested in doing it. They want to do that, but they've referred that whole thing to their legal counsel up in Portland.
Okay.
And those people are versed in water rights.
Because we only need a percentage of a percentage of a percentage
correct.
Of their total water right.
Correct.
They got a big one out there.
Yeah.
So
well, they have.
When are we looking at actually doing that project?
Well, it's underway, and the engineering study has been completed. We're in the process of getting bids from contractors, and we're underway. So that project is happening.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was actually thinking about that this morning, mm-hmm. not knowing you were on the agenda this morning, I wanted to find out what is the status mm-hmm. of that project.
Well, we run into Marta all the time, and she's kind of just...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Got you the money.
I think every time we see her, we assure, hey, this thing, hey...
Oh,
I was at the meeting, and they approved it, so we're all set to go now.
Well, and grant givers are... That's their worst nightmare is you give money to somebody and then they don't use it.
Makes them look bad, and that's the bad part.
Yeah. I don't have that issue with the airports department.
Okay.
Any money that anybody points in our direction is going to be immediately put to use, believe me. So there's just a lot of moving parts that happen, and a lot of them aren't highly visible. So that's why it looks like nothing's happening, but it is. And Precision Approach Engineering has already done the public... outreach portion, and they're getting grants, or I'm sorry, quotes to get all this work done for contractors. So, significant issues. We've talked about this a lot, and I've talked about this over the years, but now it's really come to a head, and I think it's the time is right. You know, all three of you, I've had discussions with you individually about the need for having money available to the airports department that we can point to at any given moment in time and say to the Federal Aviation Administration, yes, we have grant match money. You can give us that $10 million grant to extend the runway, and we have $1 million in our escrow account or something. Well, we've got several years where we need to get to that point. And I think maybe a year ago or more, I might have said at this table, we need to put away $200,000 a year for the next 5 years so that we can get this done. And Of course, that gets spent as we go. I'm putting in match money for the master plan, which is part of that $10 million, master plan update, which is now in progress. Phase two will be the 30% engineering design and the environmental assessment, okay? And that's probably a $1 million plus project just to do that. Probably closer to $1.5 million
for the runway extension.
Yeah, this is all runway extension I'm talking about. Yeah, and I'm looking. I have
we're
a,
on master plan, and now we're on the runway extension.
Well, master plan is part of the runway extension.
Right, right.
Yeah, and so then phase two of the runway extension is going to be the environmental assessment. But the environmentalists don't know where to wander around and look for stuff. So until they have a 30% engineering design for the runway extension,
and is the percolation test? Affected? Did that percolation test that we did? Does that come into there anywhere at all? I mean, but it was on the other end of the runway, though, wasn't it?
It was. It okay. was at the it was at the end of the runway where we will never do any extensions.
We won't do
any
anyway. But on the runway like extension itself, it's 5,500 feet.
55 or 6,000, depending on.
I think in a conversation we had the other day, just in yakking, mm-hmm. I'd like to look into that 6,000 because I can see some stuff. I don't see it because I don't read into the future, but I see potential there mm-hmm, mm-hmm. of something really nice for our airport.
Absolutely.
As Medford yep. is almost reached their limit of their expansion 12 years ago, which mm-hmm. was supposed to be take their capabilities for 20 years and satisfy it.
Right.
I saw a plane taking off there the other day. I said, I don't even know what that is. You know, it was a different airlines altogether.
Yeah.
So they are soliciting airlines to come into Medford.
Where do you think or when do you think it'll be at the 5-year mark or sooner that the runway expansion will
now.
Be us?
Now.
Okay.
Yep.
And we have to come up with $1 million.
By the end of 5 years, we have to have that money in the pipeline and it will be used.
So, Darren, this is one that what's happened the last 2 years, 3 years, mm-hmm. is we've taken our portion of economic development money mm-hmm. that we get, and that's where it's gone. So even though Julie as our economic development, I see that hand. As our economic development director has been frustrated that she will come up with a plan of I'd like to invest here, I'd like to invest there, but we as commissioners have said we see this as one of our highest economic development projects, and we kind of bypass and say we're going to put it here. And as he said, Larry said, that we have a need for 5 more years worth of funding. It is something we haven't figured out yet. It's part of why.
How much is that annually?
We get $300,000 to $400,000 annually, of which $100,000 of last year's was dedicated mm-hmm. to the Ivy Airport, but we've talked about moving that too because mm-hmm. of the projects out in Selma and all that other kind of stuff. So there's some different things in hold there. Mm-hmm. And Dan had come up with the 3% lodging tax that we had talked about dedicating to fare and airports, you know, that kind of stuff. So mm-hmm. this is one of those big things that we need to kind of figure out and make a plan for. And
right, because it needs $200,000 to $250,000 a year still to make that.
Correct.
Right, and I've made presentations, for example, to the Joint City-County Economic Development Committee. And I'll be a regular attendee at those meetings because a year ago, they listed the airports department as one of their top three priorities for permanently funding.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
because there's so much benefit to businesses in the city of Grants Pass as well as for the county. So that's a possibility.
The city would be pitching in towards
yes.
something out there. We haven't figured out what the ask would be. But understanding that it's city businesses generally that would be benefiting from that expansion. And Dan, sorry, go ahead.
Quite prematurely, but I've had a conversation with Arthur O'Hare. I think I know how this works, that if, for instance, the FAA is considering a grant for the runway extension, I'm going to use the Highway 62 bypass as an example.
Mm-hmm.
That was $100+ million project, and of course we know in RV Act there was no money and no idea, but it was a plan and we had the match dedicated. And as soon as something broke loose in Portland, all of a sudden they said, where is a big project we need to spend this money, and bang, up pops the devil, and yep. Highway 62 bypass, $124 million project, happens just like that.
Right.
I approached Arthur with the concept of, could we take $1.5 million of the general fund and just basically carve it out, I don't know what to put it in, an escrow is the right terminology, but say that we have that match going in, if push comes to shove, and then we could work back towards, if it takes 5 years, fine, but if it doesn't take 5 years, mm-hmm. it may be something that they look at and say, you know what, you don't have to wait 5 years, you've got everything ready to go, and you have your match, mm-hmm. so we're going to go ahead and pull the trigger on that in 2.5 years.
And then have a mechanism to
and have a mechanism to repay that.
Yeah, yeah.
And Arthur said that mm-hmm. could certainly be done. It's just basically a letter of commitment from the county that, yes, that fund, that match would be back.
I know
and
that,
use a general fund kind of as collateral.
Right, as collateral.
However, mm-hmm. but it's still our money and it's still there. We can still spend it. But it's just something, you know, a letter of commitment, I mm-hmm. think, from mm-hmm. the Board of County Commissioners that, yes, we're behind this project fully. And if that may be what pulls the trigger on this thing, because I know I've been in RV Act and it says, well, talent, do you have your match? It's called leverage. And if you don't have the match, that matches the leverage.
It is.
And if you don't have that match, well, we think we can get it. And they go, and they kind of just push that over, mm-hmm. and they move on to somebody. Do you have the match? You bet. In fact, we're going to match that. We have 110% of the match. They go, you're in. And that project gets snapped right up.
This is one of the reasons why I'd like us to come up with a list of what all projects we need to be doing as a county. This mm-hmm. is part of this week's two-day thing. Is
that's right.
What's on the horizon that we need to be planning for? What things are we looking at? And honestly, I think the county needs to invest in a software that we have all those projects in, and kind of like a Gantt chart where you're looking at, where is it in that project? Well, it's just in concept. Mm-hmm. No, we have engineering done. No, we're at fundraising, or we're at blah, blah, blah. So we can kind of track as a whole these projects and look at any point, what's the status of that project, and we can
decide
see.
When you can fund what you...
Correct.
But let's go back to that, the concept of that. I was going to bring that to you later, but we're talking about it today, and Larry's here. That's just something. It was just something Arthur and I were talking about last week. And I thought, you know what, eventually, you know, we're going to be bringing that to the board. What's the board think about it? Well, you could be thinking about it, of what you think that leads to look like. Because I would like to see us have a match dedicated, whether it be an escrow or a commitment that, you know, you go to the bank and the bank says, yeah, we're going to lend the guy $150,000 on that house remodel. They don't have the, they don't take that money out of their circulation, but it's a letter of commitment.
Sure. And I'll say that having that letter of commitment available so that I can supply that to the FAA today mm-hmm. will go a long way toward making sure that that runway extension stays in our five-year plan and gets moved up if at all possible. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I'm doing everything I can to make it happen faster.
Well, I've seen it happen at RV Act when, you know,
yep.
Talon or Eagle Point, you know, they got a project going. It's all well and good. Everybody loves a project, but they don't have the match.
Yeah.
And if they don't have the match, it just kind of moves on down the table, and then something else that does have the match.
So here's a perfect example of that. Last fall, during the application and defense of our grant applications to the RV Act, we had the Southern Oregon Air Academy facilities upgrade, and we had the water pond completion at the Illinois Valley Airport. The commissioners had already committed $100,000 from the sale of the CJ building to that water pond completion, okay? But the Southern Oregon Air Academy did not have a big pile of money in their corner that they could point to and say, this is a matching grant for what we need. And I thought that was a more worthy application myself, and I was presenting it, you know, along with Caleb, but the RV Act went with the water pond because it's a sure deal. You know, it's $100,000 of county match to go against the regional solutions $250,000.
And so, aviation is usually the farthest thing from their plate over there for some reason. They just don't approve aviation projects very often.
Well, lately they've seen surprising. Me every year now for the last several good. Years. So yeah, I'm in their face.
But I think Arthur needs to, yep. you know, Arthur could do a presentation on that when the time's right.
Sure. And I completely hear you and agree that we need to figure something out. I also think that there's probably 100 other projects that we have in the county sure. that we need to identify. Mm-hmm. And what would have commitment
worthy.
Letters.
Yeah.
And patrol.
Yeah.
And detectives, and, you know, keeping in mind of what is that impact if we do that.
Yep.
As we're going to be coming up shy in the next couple of years on some other functional operations versus, so one-time projects
no
versus
doubt.
Operations. So part of one of those things that, what are we tracking with bigger picture of the whole organization of what we our needs are.
Yep.
So I appreciate that. Before you leave, mm-hmm. one of the items on our agenda, item 6, is the AMAC Airport Business Diversity Conference
right,
in Seattle.
That. Mm-hmm.
And mainly because, so I was airport liaison in 2017, and in that process, I was asked to be the designated DiBello for the...
Yeah, the Disadvantaged County. Business Enterprise Liaison Officer, right?
Yeah, so federal requirements are that we have... an individual identified in the organization that is making sure that if disadvantaged businesses have equal access and get a portion of our bids.
Have the opportunity to bid on these federally funded projects. Yeah.
And this year there's a lot of reports and different stuff that we're doing to be in. My biggest concern is there's liability related to this. And it's my name on the signature line, because when you took over as liaison, you guys still voted to keep me as the liaison.
I vote to leave it that way.
And there's a specific training for it in August in Seattle, and I would like to attend that, because right now we kind of got some consultants, but we've been submitting reports that we've put a lot of hours into, and they're getting kicked back for various reasons. We have on retainer.
And we have an expert consultant who's doing those reports
correct.
For us, and they're still getting kicked back. So there's a lot of issues with the actual civil rights office in the FAA and whether or not they're interpreting our submissions properly. And so there's a lot of back and forth. But.
And if you guys pick somebody else to be the liaison for that, whoever that may
be. Misspelled word and stuff usually helps out.
That's fine, because commissioners come and go. And it may be that it needs to be a staff person, or it may need be that it has to be someone from legal, or I don't know the right area, but whoever it is should be going to the trainings to know what our obligations are.
Yeah,
well,
and
do we have a professional company, you say, that's writing these?
It's Precision Approach Engineering, which is
right.
Their focus is on airports and airport requirements,
so
and they have. They're
do they attend?
They do. However, the civil rights, FAA Civil Rights Division requirement is that it be an elected official
who is
our liaison officer to the civil
good.
Rights, and that's why we're at that. Yeah.
Well, by that time we'll have that conversion van, so we'll have to have motels.
Well, you know, we got a clerk, we got Connie, I mean, there's lots of people that are elected here, and you guys should all get together and think about this stuff and figure out who you really want to do that. And whatever you decide, I'm okay with it, because it's a chore. You know, it's one of these things that you got to do it, you got to get it right, and it's just one of those things we have to do because we take money from the federal government.
Okay. And I asked that I forward it to staff. So you're going to a different conference
in March.
In March.
But there is a training, or at least a presentation, by Sonia Cruz, who is
the
civil rights person at the FAA. Yeah.
And so you're going to go to that, but I didn't ask to be a part of that conference because the overall conference isn't appropriate. But this one in August is just for this diversity stuff. So going to that one makes more sense than going to
And whoever goes to that probably should plan on being the DBE liaison officer for some period of time after that. Otherwise, it's a wasted effort, you know. So yeah, it's worth thinking about, you know, who gets it, you know, short straw, new guy, you know, whatever.
Don't care. I mean, that I have it. I just, when this training came up last year and I asked, I was told no. Seeing how many reports I'm submitting and getting submitted back and emails back, and it's my name on the line, I don't really like having responsibilities I'm not given the best opportunity to succeed in. And so I'm going to ask that whoever it is going to be, continue to be, goes to that training in August.
See, and so your name's on the line already, rather than change it up and put somebody else's name on the line.
I'm fine with that.
I
feel
I
that
would,
I'm starting to get
I'd
some understanding
favor.
Of what we're doing, but...
I'd be in favor whether of sending you want to Seattle. Or not. Yep.
What's the cost of the? Did you notice? Did they have a cost for the actual conference itself? Because
not yet.
You know, it's pretty modest actually. And when I do these once a year, I go up to Seattle when the Northwest Mountain Region FAA has their meeting, and it's you know $600 or $700, you know, round trip, and the hotel and the whole nine yards is not a heck of a lot. It just depends on how much they charge for the delivery of the content itself. So.
Well, I recommend that we send somebody. But I'm in favor of sending somebody up there and I'm in favor of it not being me.
I just want it on your radar of the why I'm asking. If you guys saw the amount of work that we're putting into it,
right.
It'd be nice that we're making
well,
sure.
If we're, and I the think thing about this, it is, yeah. if we're sending stuff up there and we're not dotting the I's across and the T's, we need to know why. Yeah. And then maybe you could take a couple examples of our contracts that got sent back to say, you know, I need to know why.
Well,
what did I do wrong?
And to answer that question specifically, I believe that it has to do with their inability to understand our response to them, which is the only response we can make. And it's complicated, but it has to do with the fact that we receive a grant contract from the FAA, and then we go through a period of time where we go through it and we agree to sign it, and it gets signed and it gets implemented. And that might happen in one fiscal year, and then we start the work in the next fiscal year, next month. And it's another fiscal year, and we don't receive bids from these disadvantaged contractors.
Because they're no longer in business.
Or we just, you know, we get them in a different year from the year we got the grant. And so, you know, we say, okay, we received the grant in 2017, but we don't have any bids from disadvantaged businesses or from any businesses in 2017 on that grant. And so they kick it back saying, wait a minute, your dates don't match up.
What's their approach to that? If there is no disadvantaged contractor in your area to do that scope of work?
That would be incorrect. There's always a disadvantaged contractor.
So just so you know, Larry and I have scheduled next week on Wednesday from 3 to 5 a meeting out at the airport on this topic. Our contractors have reached out across Oregon and across Josephine County, inviting folks to take part on this topic so they know what we're doing, giving feedback on, so that it's one of the steps we have to do.
It's called a public consultation with all the disadvantaged
businesses. Do they have a disadvantaged contractors list that you can choose from? Because I don't think they do. When I was
Precision Airports has a list of known ones, and they reach out to the chambers and some of those other.
Already, yeah.
I would think if I was a disadvantaged contractor, I'd say, is there a list floating around here?
Right.
Because I used to do a lot of work for the Forest Service until I actually read their bidders list, and then I couldn't do that anymore because I did not qualify under their bidders. My race was not on the list of people that was allowed
it's
to
do just,
that.
It's just like hiring here. You know, we have to give points to certain applicants because they're either veterans or et cetera.
Yeah.
So just we have to give points to disadvantaged businesses when they apply.
Well, I'm going back to the original deal. I'm in favor of signing up for that training.
Okay.
But let's make sure we have a list of concerns that we have leaving here so you can address those while you're there. Both of you go up to that same thing?
Oh, we...
Okay, so we'll be well represented.
You're going to Seattle one,
too? I'm probably not going to go to that one myself, but to answer your question. But, they want an elected official, so, you know.
Joy.
Maybe you need to talk an elected official into that.
So,
like Wally or somebody, you know.
No, I don't see the point in switching it unless you guys see it long-term, who's going to be there in that position. I mean, for now, I mean, I plan on being there through this year and next year.
I mean, you could do that, and I plan on being a liaison until I'm done here. So I don't think the two crowd each other.
No, there's very little interchange, I think.
No, you get the fun, and I get the work.
That's right. Good for me.
Okay.
The problem is?
All right, anything else on the... do you guys want us to bring that back later, or is that enough for today to say that somebody should be elected?
I think that's good.
I'm okay with it.
We need to move on to the fairgrounds
update. Thank you for all the time you've given me. I appreciate
it. Thank you very much.
No problem.
It's why we moved to Tuesday, so we could have more time than the Thursday agendas, but they
and
still
I have a
reputation
for being very verbose.
So that takes care of number 6 on the agenda?
Correct.
All right, good.
2 with 1 stone.
All right. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir.
Yep. All right, so we have the Fairgrounds quarterly update. And we have Tamara Martin, our fair director, and we have Mary Groves of... I don't know what your official title is, Mary.
Mary Groves, that's what she is.
Mary Groves is past
president.
Past director.
Right.
Yeah.
Grant
writer, yeah. Extraordinaire.
Director emeritus, yeah. And we brought Ryan with us.
Oh, okay. And Ryan from facilities, yeah. Ryan Johnson. Okay.
Why not?
So, this is actually the first quarterly update that I've been here for. I'll know next time to bring you guys a little update. But really what we've been working on...
Well, this is why we talked about, do we even know what is expected in a quarterly update? What do you guys need to be passing on? What are we expecting to receive? We talked about this at the manager meeting 2 weeks ago, that maybe we redefine that.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think the biggest thing that, you know, I've really been working on in the last quarter is really just kind of gaining an understanding of the fairgrounds as a whole. There's obviously a lot of moving parts. Facilities is a big effort and push that has been happening lately. Besides the fact just the day-to-day operations with the event rentals, we did secure a new tractor for the fairgrounds through a great negotiation deal with Pape and Friends of the Fairground. They've actually purchased that equipment for us. So that is on the fairgrounds. Press release will be probably next week at this point. So that is going to be that's fantastic. The other piece that we have kind of coming up is the introduction of a new event at the fairgrounds called Bacon, Brews, and Bronx. That's going to be April 20th. We have...
That's a funny date.
Yeah. A little mini... nothing like that. A little mini festival prior to an evening entertainment with a rodeo. So it's going to be...
April 20th?
Mm-hmm. It is going to be a very family-friendly event that, at this point, we are trying our best to keep free. So,
wow.
Yeah, so this is going to be a really...
They just buy their own beer?
Yep, they can come in and they can buy their food and their, you know, be participate at the
This
vendors.
Is right up...
Yeah.
Yeah,
Commissioner
Powers,
I know he likes bacon. He goes, he's the one that started the pub crawl and the brew this and everything else. Perfect. I know he's into craft beer.
Man. Yep.
Absolutely. I'm betting on the Bronc.
Yeah. So it's you know, the biggest push that I've been really working on as I've been moving forward and looking forward is the relevance for our community, for our county today, multi-use facility, and ways that I can really showcase what is available at the fairgrounds and how the community can, you know, use us more often. We do have the center field obviously being worked on. That turf will be laid May 1st and ready for a horse racing season. So I spoke with the Dutch Brothers crew, and they plan on having the racetrack all nice back and pretty, turf down and out of there come May 1. And
are they going to turf the entire?
Yes.
Isn't that something?
It's going to be pretty spectacular.
No kidding.
Lights, everything is out there. It's actually quite beautiful. And then they'll come back hopefully for fall soccer. Obviously, we have the horse racing season in that period.
That's over by 4th of July?
That's over by the second weekend. So okay. July, I think it's like the 9th or something.
It's going to make some adjustments
like
out of the horse racing people.
You know,
as far as getting horses from the stalls and... Yeah,
they're making noise about a tunnel.
Yeah.
They are making noise, but that for the horses.
Not for the horses.
That's for the soccer facility.
So they don't have to go across the track.
So they don't have to go across the track. But for horse racing, you know, it shouldn't be too much of a conflict. The only way this is happening is truly Travis, who's the owner of Dutch Brothers and Love Abounds, is doing this, is a horse racer as well. So there's considerations as he's moving forward of that both industries, because he wants both of those activities to remain, which really stays in focus with our multi-use. So, but I brought Mary and Ryan today because we need to talk a little bit about the update in the kitchen that we have going on, and so that we can move forward on that project. Ryan?
Yeah. In a prior meeting, we discussed
a pavilion.
This is a pavilion.
Okay.
Yeah. It's not called a pavilion anymore.
We've got kitchens. in the formal building. And
Just a bunch of kitchens out there. In a prior meeting, we discussed upgrading it to a commercial kitchen and basically established a budget of the funds that we currently have, right around $40,000. After getting estimates and multiple estimates and so forth, we're not going to be able to accomplish the goal with that $40,000 budget. We're going
to it was 100, wasn't it?
It started out as 100.
But
100 or 110?
And you weren't here to see the changes probably in December. So actually, this is what we got in December. We decided not to move the appliances to... to the wall. That saved us almost $50,000. We don't have to have engineering. We don't have to have, you know, we're going to use the same
hole
in the
slab
roof.
And all that other
stuff. We're just turning the appliances around, basically, so now whoever's cooking is facing whoever's coming in the door of the kitchen, and they have prep tables behind them.
Correct.
We had already, our budget, and the budget that I had figured out was $47,000. Between volunteers and Tamara Fairgrounds Fund was already $6,500. And we have $40,500 in the bank right now from grant funds. So we had already planned from our end $47,000. Ryan's bid is $50,000. So there's a $3,000.
Yeah, 50 to 55 probably. Because I
now he's up in it.
We're acting as the general. Obviously,
is Brown.
So to take into account facilities time and so forth, not knowing because construction, we're going to build a basically a barrier wall behind the appliances just for look, and that'll all probably be done internally. I think we'll probably be fine right around the 50, but always like to have a little bit of contingency. You never know what may come up.
And in talking with Tamara, there's a $3,000 piece that we would be missing between my budget and his budget. She thinks she can pull that out of operations funds easy enough.
So we're
I think we can cover it all.
If we use 55 for a number, are we going to be safe at 55? And does that include the 3,000 that you're talking about?
Yes, mm-hmm.
But that's also the 3,000 was to get to 50. So you need 8,000 to get to 55.
Right. So, but if you get, but if we use $55,000 as a number, and say we are, then you got three, we're basically 12 behind.
Yeah.
12 behind, and the project's done.
Right.
Not
yes, about 12 behind.
Yeah, we haven't really put the shovel in the ground yet. So I always like to make sure the funding's there, the budget's set before we even start, because I don't want to go over budget. The big chunk of the money is going to the hood by itself. Mm-hmm. We're almost $30,000 just with the hood, so that's why we'll be doing stuff internally, you know, tying it back to the fire alarm system, pulling in circuitry. There's no separate heat in the kitchen, so once we start exhausting all the air, it's going to get mighty cold in there because we got to bring in, you know, we got to bring in makeup air. So we got to heat that air. So, yeah, it gets expensive quick. So then putting the appliances in place. So most of it is purchasing materials for this budget.
Well, the big mistake that's always done, and I can go to any restaurant in town and tell them what's wrong with it, and I can cut their budget for heating and cooling if they just listen, but they never do. When you go to a restaurant that has double doors, has a vestibule, there's a reason for that. Because they're sucking every bit of it. All they pay to heat and air condition that, the place where the people sit.
Right.
And then the kitchen wipes it out because the cook's got cold. And cold. So they just shut the makeup air unit off, leave the exhaust fan going at 5,000 cubic feet per air per minute, do the math, in less than 7 minutes, you've wiped out everything you paid to heat for the customer's comfort, just went out through the kitchen because it cooks cold.
Yeah. And we kind of marked some of those contractors off the list when they recommended, you know, leaving the doors or the window open and using that the space heat to satisfy that.
So anyway, but that's...
what was your solution?
It's called a makeup air unit, and it takes outside, 100% outside air, and it will reheat it with gas and put it back into the kitchen. but you don't reheat it to 72 degrees. You reheat it to maybe 60. And that cook's happier than a pig in new mud back there, and he's doing just fine. But you...
If he's busy in front of those gas stoves, he should be warm.
That's right, exactly. And there's ways to initiate that air, too, to where it comes into right next to the hood and goes back up the hood, so that the kitchen itself around you is heated with the stove, the ambient off of the stove and everything. Mm-hmm. And you can do it. It's not that tough to do. But it's just making sure that balance is there, because if that balance isn't there, you just sucked everything you paid. My electric bill, my gas bill, why I can't afford it. Well, I guess you can't. And you wipe it out of there in an alarming rate. It's fast. It's gone.
So if we get this done, and that's your plan is what you have on your plans, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So we'll be smarter kitchen people than those other restaurants.
Yes, for sure.
Okay. What is our operations? Because the contract that they have with Peggy was coming out of budget this year, too, which is more than normal operations costs.
Okay.
So you think you can still make up the difference in operations for the $3,000? Or there's still an ask of us today of something different?
I think that, you know, what's going to end up happening with that is there's going to have to be most likely a supplemental budget as we come into the end of the year between Peggy and the stormwater monthly charge that has now come up. There's going to be... We had it covered before, but we're going to have to readdress it. That being said... Well, we will be able to cover it in revenues. It's not going to be a deficit for the county. So there will be, the money will be there, per se.
Okay.
But we'll have to create the paperwork to follow that along.
I'd like to look at your stormwater thing and see if, I think our stormwater goes to Allen Creek. I don't think it goes back into the city's stormwater plan. So I would question whether or not.
We sent some documentation over to legal. For review,
okay,
because it's excessive, the charges, with very little notification.
I can see if it goes into a storm drain on Island Creek Road and goes down here and through the normal storm drain system.
Right,
I'm okay with that. But if all of our stuff dead ends at Island Creek, like it always has been, I think.
Well, it's just under 1,500.
It goes between the arena. Goes between the arena and at the back end of Public Works and out to the river.
Then it probably does go through the city storm system, and then you would. Then there's a charge for that.
We're also asking that they clarify the surface area that they're basing it on, because that's not included in any of the billings. So
okay, they're just taking the footprint of the fairgrounds itself.
Yeah, same with parks. We're getting charged for X amount of surface area.
Yeah.
Well, we want to know what that surface area is, because you also have the buses, the school, multiple areas in there. So we just want to get that clarified to make sure we're in agreement with what the surface area is.
Well, I know what they're going to come back with. They're going to say you either have a parking lot that drains into the system, or you have a roof that drains into the gutter that drains into the system. You know, it's basically the footprint of the whole facility.
Sure. So, but then the property lines, because when we have commingled at the fairgrounds...
Perfectly acceptable to ask that question.
And then as far as funding for the project, facilities can't charge property reserve for our labor, and because we have a different arrangement with the fairgrounds for labor, I would ask that the $3,000 be used for man hours on the job, and then equipment is purchased through the property reserve.
Okay.
Well, so this is going to help with revenue generation, too, though? You'll be able to rent a commercial kitchen out?
Yes. So there are
also emergency services.
Oh, mm-hmm.
For Red Cross certification and all that kind of stuff.
Sure. Yeah, because right now it's currently set up as a warming kitchen, so if we can get that to an actual full kitchen, then any sort of emergency,
that's what it looks like.
That would be something that we could definitely use. It can be used as a revenue source as well for caterers. I've had calls for, do you have a kitchen that I can, a commercial kitchen, so I can come in and make my jam and So there will be opportunities to recap that.
One of the things also during the emergency thing, we put those two plug-ins out there for RVs right off of that.
Yes.
Also, because that can, I would think that would be something at an asset during an emergency, because you'd be able to pull in search and rescue or whoever and plug them right into that building, mm-hmm. and be all set to go there.
So. Or a shower trailer, a or something else like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm? Is there a generator?
There's not.
No, it comes off the
there is a generator at Public Works, right?
Yeah, there's a portable.
But we actually, when Julie was asking for some funds, we asked for 3 or 4 generators, and part of that thing, that, but right. I never heard that she got anywhere with that.
Well, that was we got some stuff from, was it Avista Utilities? They had a bunch of surplus. No, it was Gary Penny. And he belongs to something. He says, we got a whole bunch of excess. We got a bunch of stuff, brand new stuff. Do you want it? And there was a ton of generators, just the little generators. And I can't remember who I gave that to, but they were going to get, I'll call Penny and find out if we received a bunch of generators, because I think we did, and I think it might have gone out to emergency management, because it was right during the end of that fire season.
Stored in that cert trailer that's on the fairgrounds.
It might be. I don't know.
I know there are some generators in there, but I don't know where they came from.
There was a lot of equipment, and it just came through because it was surplus. I said, these new? And he said, they're brand new. We've got to get rid of them, and you might as well have them. And I don't know how many there was. I can get an inventory or what that was.
Who do we need to find out?
I'll find out about that.
Reach out to Sarah Rubrecht.
I was pinning them.
Sarah has actually been out. Sarah and Emily have been out inventorying whatever's in that.
But if there's a need for generators with you guys, they are putting in a grant right now, this fire grant. And I know they're asking for a bunch. The problem is that there's like 5 million statewide, and so everybody's asking for everything. But if there is something that needs to be added to that, right now's the time to ask.
Okay.
Never hurts to ask. I'll look that up. I'll call Jerry.
Okay, so...
So basically, we have $40,000 that we've received in grant money for this kitchen. Where we're really kind of short is in that $15,000. I know that I can make up some of it within the operations. Like I said, the revenues are there. So, you know, can we proceed forward to create this kitchen so that we can have an emergency kitchen, an updated kitchen, something that looks a little bit nicer? Or are we going to have to give this money back?
I would like to have talked to Arthur about this and just get an idea from Arthur where that could come from.
I actually talked to Arthur.
Yeah.
You did?
Yes, and he said she definitely could make it up in revenues, or we could go with the building fund and a loan from the building fund if we needed to, as last.
And Commissioner Fowler is going to love hearing me say this, but I don't want to let that money go back.
Exactly. It's hard work.
Knock it off.
$40,500 in grants, and they came from 7 different grants. Mm-hmm. We got at least that much. And if I don't get it going pretty soon, some of it starts going back, because Cow Creek is the first one that's... I did send them all an update letter, sent them the new plan.
Yeah.
That we're not going to put it on the wall. It saved us $50,000. You know, I told them the story. So that's been done.
Right.
Haven't gotten any flack from anybody.
Let's get this thing figured out so we can send a commitment letter. Said, yes, we've got the money. We're going to move forward.
We don't need a commitment
letter.
We need us to bless them to get going on the project.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Well, where's the magic wand?
Ryan needs to hear from you that it's a go.
Yeah,
you want to make a motion?
It's always been.
Yeah, that's what you want to hear.
I think it gives them a solid answer.
Yeah, then I make a motion that we would provide the financing or the backing for it.
Yeah, I second that. We just pick up the delta there.
So I would support.
From the facilities fund, right?
But it's a loan from the facilities fund that can be made back with revenue, mm-hmm. Versus us. It's not gifting, it's loaning.
Not gifting.
Right.
To clarify, is that okay?
Yeah, that clarifies the motion.
Well, I just don't want to let this. I don't want to let this opportunity go. You guys have done a lot of work involved in this thing, and to just be that close and then not grab that ring, I can't imagine that. We're not flush in Josephine County, but we're certainly not destitute to pass up.
Well, right. Again, that's where economic development funds come
we're
in
gonna,
sometimes.
We're gonna
but
get the
because
goal
it's
today.
The building
yeah,
fund
okay.
that we can loan
okay.
it from,
right.
airports
right.
has been
so
allowed
right
to do that, some others, and if they pay it back.
We've got a lot of stuff going on here.
Perfect.
So yeah.
Keep checking these boxes off.
So before you move
on
Mary, hold that thought. So we have a motion to allow Fair to move forward with loaning from the building fund. And a second from Dan. All those in favor say aye.
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 Motion carries 3-0. Go ahead, Mayor.
We just need a little update on what's happening with the arena roof.
We sent out the RFP. It went out on the 13th. So we'll open the bids on the 12th of March.
Okay.
And then proceed from there. So, and I can give you a little more update on some of the other projects when I give my update.
The plastic that is currently on the arena roof is leaking a lot. So we've got an entire side of the arena at this point is coned off. When we're getting these heavy rains, it's not stopping the water. So
well, I think that as we go, I don't want to put any more money into that roof because we're almost out of the rainy season to speak of.
Absolutely.
You know, because we're going to get, once this thing blows over, usually February we have some nice weather, and then we get a little more rain in April and May and whatnot, but we'll be well underway by that time, I'm assuming. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to put any more money into that roof right now. And if we got to cone off a little bit and they got to, you know, show their horses around the cones, because I guess it's pretty muddy in there in those spots. Yeah. You could sink a tracker in there.
Well, how much is the plastic replacement? It's several
like
thousand.
Yeah, so 7 or 8 grand.
Yeah. You know, the benefit of the new tractor is that it threw him, the med threw him into the wall, but because we have the bigger tractor now, he was able to maneuver himself out and not get pinned. And so, you know, he walked in going, thank goodness for the new tractor. I probably would have been thrown into the wall this morning.
Well, as this thing proceeds, you know, they get ripping that old stuff off, and the first thing you're going to do is you put down some kind of felt or vapor barrier or something. And then it's done. I mean, it's sealed in then. Right. You know, so
we can certainly take a look at it.
We have a protest period. We'll be done in May.
Okay. So with a new roof.
That's the plan. But depending on how many people are already in line ahead of us, because these roofing contractors, they get scheduled way out as soon as the weather breaks. So we won't know for sure until we get that final bid. But yeah, we're shooting to be done by the end of May.
This is a huge thing in 2 years to be here.
Are they Duralasting it or are they?
Or a comparable product.
Okay.
Yeah, we're getting a lot of questions about that because a lot of people are feeling like they can't bid because it's Duralast, but it can be a comparable product. So.
Although Duralast is close.
Yeah.
Well, that's what's on it, though. Yeah. We had problems with it the whole time that's been on it.
Well, that should have been under a warranty with them.
Well,
somewhere along
that
the way,
warranty got voided.
Yeah.
There's a whole story behind it.
It didn't really get
installed. You know, that's in the past.
I've been in it for years and years and years, and the roofing, when it leaks, it's always at the air conditioner, and it always leaks on my brand new copier that does everything, or it's on the boss's desk, or it's on the boss's new computer. And I've always just thought that was odd that that's how it did, no matter where the roof is. And guess what? The roof leaks at my industrial park, at my car shop. And did it drip in the middle of the floor where it hurts nothing? No. It dripped in and filled up my brand new auto darkening welding helmet with water.
Yeah.
On top of my welder. So the welder is wet, the auto darkening helmet's wet, and I went, anywhere in 1,200 square feet you could have dripped.
Yeah.
But nope, it's got to be in my brand new helmet.
Well, just so you know, Darren, that it's partly because we have a commitment from the commissioners, a letter of commitment for $50,000 of backup on that roof. That's what brought us the Ford Foundation $150,000 grant.
Wow. Yeah.
So that grant's in the bank. We have $50,000 in the bank on this project from Rotary already, and the commitment from Rotary was $200,000.
What a different story from just a few years ago.
Yes.
You tell it in detail.
There's a progression that when the commissioners signed a letter of commitment to the fairgrounds for 20 years, because we have the Love of Bounds contract for basically 20 years, that's when why would anybody in the public put money into something that your own commissioners don't have faith in?
Right.
That's nuts. Yeah. And it's just that progression. Now that you're getting buy-in from the public, you're going to get even more buy-in as things come in. Now all of a sudden you got people saying, That's an investment. That's an opportunity for Josephine County instead of a thorn in our side.
And I think that
you brought up earlier today, that concerns me a lot.
Part of, I think, you know, I had somebody come in just this last week and said, I've been hearing you guys have been doing some improvements. I want to go take a look.
Huh?
And I'm like, okay, well, let's go, you know. And I went through and showed him, and he was flat out blown away.
Yeah.
And he's booking an event there. He's like, I had no idea.
That's it.
I think everybody thought that place was in complete disarray and disrepair, yeah. And that everywhere you went, there was buckets all over
exactly.
the floor. The guy we took around the other day, mm-hmm. now he's pretty well connected. He's excited yeah. about that venue.
And I actually think that that's where that came from.
Yeah,
so,
I must have been. I bet it was yeah. Rich.
No, right? Rich did come, but it was somebody else outside.
Okay, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, so, you know, the fairgrounds as far as, you know, community events and activities, private parties and events, we are busy every single weekend. And that's why I had invited you to come out and do a tour, because I'd love to show off
yeah.
the progress and to talk about the things that are still up and coming, because it's just going to continue to roll.
I need to call what's his name over at the school district to make sure that, you know, when we tear the roof off of
yes.
Redwood, that we get all that material.
Jim.
Yeah.
James Lowe.
James Lowe.
Make sure that he's aware of that. And then we can use that on those barns over there, on those cattle barns and livestock cattle barns.
Great.
And that would just, Ed
yeah.
nice up there too.
Yeah.
It's red, kind of a barn door red.
Any idea when they were going to do that?
They're just waiting for go through budget. I mean, I just wanted to make sure that he knew that we had a dog in the fight there. Don't just go up there with a flat nose shovel and rip it off and throw it in a wad and throw it in the back end of a metal truck. You know, save those panels, because we can cut those panels, and we'll be able to use out of those panels. Anything, I don't care what roof it is, it's the felt underneath that actually is the membrane, not the roof itself. That metal just keeps sharp stuff from going through the actual water thing is underneath it. So I think we'll be in pretty good shape. And then it's cattle barn. It'll look really good and stay up there. So
the last piece is just the fair that's coming up this year. So this year's fair theme is honoring our veterans of yesterday, today, and tomorrow. And we are in line to really create an entire experience at the fair that is very much going to be a very heartfelt, warming, and we really believe that, you know, our veterans are not going to be leaving the fair not feeling completely appreciated and loved. So there's a lot of pieces that are going into that fair right now surrounding that.
I would like to see us market that statewide and even Northern California differently than
yes.
we have in the past, not just simply local access, but how are we honoring veterans Oregon-wide?
Yes.
And see if that draws in a different crowd.
So my background is actually the advertising and marketing.
So you won't like this at all.
I know, I love it. For 20 years, one of the first things that I did is analyze the advertising of the previous fairs. And I definitely believe that there is room for improvement, not only modernizing the approach, but
yeah.
the message. So I'm looking at that budget that, one, I can reduce it significantly, and two, I can have a much larger impact and message that can be sent,
okay.
not just through traditional mediums, but through social media and things of that nature. So that is definitely top of my list to readdress.
Very good.
So we didn't really resolve anything with their arena situation. We basically said...
Update. Yeah.
Live with it until May.
Yeah.
Are you guys going to be able to do that?
If it stops raining,
or is there anything
it would be
that
great.
We can do?
Well, that's what I was going to say.
I
sometimes
stand up there
the
with
plastic
umbrellas.
Tears or something, we can see if it's just, you know, we can do a quick
maybe
spot blew
up
or
yeah.
something where
fold
we can
back
re-
down and duct tape it.
We can definitely take a look at it.
Okay.
I wasn't aware it was still leaking. So.
Yeah, I had a gal come in. I met her. She's actually a connection into Siskiyou Health for fair sponsorships. She's also an equestrian mom. You know, all the high schools use the arena for practice. And she was like, literally, we're in there with raincoats.
Well,
so
is it in the same area that it was originally leaking right after we did the
I plastic? Would have to. I would have to
I
actually
think
it's
talk along
to the
that
guys.
Same wall.
Okay.
So, I know it's along a wall, and she wasn't specific on the side. So
because we brought the contractor back right after they did it because it leaked immediately.
It didn't leak immediately.
So yeah, we'll see if it's in the same spot. We'll
bring Gosh, it I don't know. Sometimes it just boggles my mind.
Yeah.
Water run downhill, how simple can you get?
Yeah, yeah.
That part hasn't changed.
Yes. Yeah, no kidding.
Anything else that you would like us to be aware of?
No, I just think that the biggest piece is just knowing that, you know, we have a team of people out at the fairgrounds that are working tirelessly to improve on all aspects. So
and it's starting to show.
It's really starting to show. We got a great momentum.
Keith was impressed. He goes, wow, we started this place to fall apart. And I said, does it look like it's falling apart to you? And he goes, no.
Yeah, we made huge progress.
And he was talking, you know, we were talking about the commercial building there, and the boy, I could put a motorcyclist playing here. Each one of these booths, you know, the different shops could have their own area, you know, like you do during the fair, and then cars down the middle on both sides. You get a lot of cars in there and stuff. We're talking about the Rod and Custom Show that's in Medford.
Yeah.
They were scheduled to go the 11th or 12th of April. That's when they were supposed to be there. They rented the place and everything, and then they put it all. It's in Street Rodder magazine that it's going to be this Roadster Show. Top 100 is supposed to be here, and it's going to be the 11th and 12th. Their fairgrounds called Rich and said, oh, you have to go to Easter weekend. And it's Easter weekend. I've done that, and it's a disaster because everybody stays home and goes to dinner on Easter. And they said, that's the only take it or leave it. And bumped him after he was already scheduled. He is furious. Because it's out in these magazines, it's Street Rodder magazine, that's where people go for their information.
Real quick, before, do either of you have an 11 o'clock, or can we go over?
No, I have an 11:30.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just want to make sure that... So I have a question. With the field infield being completed, last year there was a lot of people parking on that infield.
Yes.
And including one of the events where they had a trailer set up in the infield for the truck pulls or whatever that thing was.
Well, when they had the
pulls, yeah.
Lone Star was there. They were parked in the infield.
Everything was parked. Yeah. So, yeah. What plan for contingency of parking do we have?
So, I actually met yesterday with the Kiwanis group because they're the one that really handle all of the parking for the situations. We are in talks, and we actually feel like we're right at the end to almost a deal, almost there, with the Bank of America lot and creating a shuttle service for overflow. Kiwanis actually feels that might not be necessary, that it would be great to have, but he is saying that there are lots that they had set up that they actually never even opened in previous years. Now, what we have planned, and I don't know if it's the appropriate place to talk about it yet, but what we have planned and up and coming, we're going to have entertainment every evening. That's going to be pretty significant. So really what we concluded yesterday is, look, we need to move forward on this anyway because we need to have a backflow. But they don't believe that the loss of the infield is going to be an issue.
You know, I would disagree. If we have any bigger numbers than we've had the last 2 years, that infield was used. And I'm coming from that I'm the one on the cart at the end of the night. Mm-hmm. And first off, Kiwanis closes before the fair is closed. And so what ends up is whoever's on the carts inside the park ends up two of us sometimes out in that parking lot having to take people because they're so exhausted from where the exit is all the way around the YMCA out of their cars. But half the time I'm taking people to the infield versus out and going that loop. Mm-hmm. And it would be nice to negotiate with Kiwanis that they actually stay a half an hour after the park closes so we actually get all those people as they're walking out on their way out can get back out to their cars.
So at least have the shuttle service out to the cars that we're talking about?
The Kiwanis shuttle needs to go longer than it's going.
Right.
They close before the fair is shut down.
Derek can drive a tractor.
Awesome.
And that's something
that's not Kiwanis shuttle. That's
Port Benoit. Is that what you're talking about? That shuttle?
Yes.
Okay.
Straw hats.
So Kiwanis only handles the parking piece of it. The shuttles is Port Benoit.
Okay, so Port Benoit Farms, if it's a way to get them to go another hour every night, that would be great.
Okay.
Or try to put more golf carts out there. Well, depending on where you have to go.
The problem we had with the golf carts... Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
The problem with the golf carts that we had last year was the fires.
Yeah.
So right at the end, we were struggling to find enough golf carts to accommodate the fair. So that's what I heard last year was part of the issue.
That's true.
Do you know Daryl Frost?
We don't.
Never mind. Anyway.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes or no?
I like the B of A lot down here. I know when they have the shuttle, Pam and I go pick the shuttle up there at, Hawthorne Park? Longreach Park?
Yeah.
And we pick the shuttle up and go because if I go out there, it's another $10 car wash when I'm done because that thing's awful dusty.
Yeah.
And I can just, you know, park my car up there at the tennis courts and I'm off and running. And that down there would be a really nice place to just park the car. People have a nice car and whatnot.
Yeah.
And they'll park it there and take the shuttle rather than
the shuttle's not even offered anymore, is it?
Well, we're talking about a shuttle coming in
from the B&A parking lot.
Right. From the B&A, starting it up again.
Okay.
And, you know, and I guess kind of my point to them is that, you know, even if they don't think there's a space, there's a convenience aspect where there are a lot of people who will be more than happy to park off-site and get dropped off at the gate.
And they let you off right at the gate.
And so, you know, I think that that piece is actually an area that, you know, in the next couple of years I actually want to grow so that we reduce some of the traffic that's happening out on Redwood
Avenue. We used to do it. And like Wildlife Images has their little trolley that, you know, it's good advertising.
Put a tip jar on there and everybody I saw was grabbing for money. And there was like, you get done with Hell's Gate Excursion, the guy's on the dock and... You're going to give him $20 if he did a good job, and it's worth it.
So I agree, and I think that is definitely something that we're working on.
Okay. Yeah. So one other question I have for you. We have a new director at the YMCA, and he's going to be coming and meeting with us in the next week, and maybe next week. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that was unresolved kind of with the last director of both leaving is that there is an agreement in place with the YMCA that they're supposed to continue paving of the parking lot based on usage and such, and it's substantially behind of what usage is compared to what's been paved. Do we know where that contract is that says that's part of their deal? Is that kept with the fairgrounds or with legal? Okay, because it is something I'm going to be asking about next week. I don't know if you want to come to that meeting or not, but he wants to get familiar with us, wants to be a much bigger
partner.
And I think that's great. He's come from some different YMCA experiences in urban areas that were pretty big. And so I just want to make sure that we're looking at that partnership and what does that mean overall and all that kind of stuff. So,
well, I know they're behind on their schedule of paving that parking lot. It was supposed to be so much. And we only charge them a dollar a year or something.
But with that dollar a year, there's maintenance requirements.
Exactly.
So we want to, before that meeting, make sure that we look at that contract and have those conversations. Yeah. And just...
That contract.
Okay. Anything else?
It could also be brought up on an annual inspection. Usually there's some type of annual inspection we do out at the YMCA just to
make sure they're keeping it walkthrough. They're not no paint peeling or anything.
Yeah.
Good.
Any other thoughts?
They wanted to expand, and the fair board basically said no, they didn't like that idea where they wanted to expand to.
Well, they wanted to go up, and we would block the visual from the grandstands to the starting gate all the way down in the tube.
Right.
Because the quarter horses all start down there in the end of that tube, and you wouldn't be able to see the start of the race from the grandstands because they wanted to go up on the track side. They wanted to go up 1.5 stories or a 12-foot story. It wouldn't work. So.
Would this be the appropriate time for to talk about what I brought to you in regards to the fair, or would that be better served?
No, let's wait.
Time?
Huh? Let's wait. No, you can bring it up now. We're here. It's an open meeting, and quite honestly, this is not a bad time.
All right. Well, one of the pieces, I'm still trying to learn what is appropriate for different meetings and such.
So am I.
So bear with me. One of the pieces for the fair that we would really like to do as part of the veterans is offer free admission for all veterans and active duty service members, which, of course, with our fair theme, that is going to be a large piece of who we're really trying to bring in and attract. That will take a hit on our gate sales. And so I've approached Dan about the possibility of the county and the Board of Commissioners coming in and helping with a partnership with the fair as, you know, free admission for veterans, active duty service members brought to you by the Josephine County Board of Commissioners, so that it would become a presenting factor.
We would, the county would become a sponsor of the veterans at the fair.
At the veterans at the fair.
We would sponsor them.
And so there would be a couple of other ways that we can, you know, look at that, of how it could also benefit, you know, the county as well. But there are going to be some pieces there that if we do that, we will definitely take a hit at the gate sales. So what we're looking at is a possibility of just over $49,000 to come in and sponsor that element of the fair.
Pardon me.
That's okay. And so just kind of curious as far as what your thoughts on that would be and if that would be something that would be a possibility.
Another thing that we kicked around is that's a guess as to what it would be. How many veterans would you actually come in and take advantage of that? But would those veterans bring in their families where maybe the whole family wouldn't have come to the fair before? I think we have one of our acts is going to be just part of the admission to the fair, too. I think we kicked around that a little bit.
So depending on whether or not I can get that piece covered, mm-hmm. we'll determine. So what we've actually confirmed, we're going to bring in Lee Greenwood for Wednesday night as part of the veterans.
Really?
That's so, awesome for the veterans thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Who could be better?
Okay.
So, you know, so that's the piece, and what we're trying to do is make that a free event. And
With gate admission.
So that it's not a separate ticketed event. If I can't secure the sponsorship,
right, mm-hmm.
then I can't do that because I wouldn't be able to cover the expense
right.
of putting Both. Together this event.
Right.
So that's kind of what we're looking at, you know, and obviously with our county tagline, it came to you guys first. And see what you guys thought.
I think we need to think on that. I love the idea of the county sponsoring, but $50,000 sponsorship is a big push with the other expenses that we're looking at for other projects. So we would need to see where it would come from, what that expense would be. And we also need to see, are there any community partners between Josephine and Jackson County that would want to sponsor in a big way that would help take that on? Or VSO, or, you know, what other opportunities are there before we go to us? Yes, sir.
One of the things that I noticed last year, because last year, I know it was because of the smoke, but our vendors really didn't do as well as they thought they would. And I think anything we can do to bolster the amount of people that come to the fair mm-hmm. with all of the exciting stuff and so on and so forth and get more people to the fairgrounds, that would help those vendors out. And if we don't have the vendors, it doesn't look busy on the Midway. If we don't look busy on the Midway, we don't have a fair.
Right.
So there's a number of different things. And I think Tamara was talking about having a parade instead of the opening ceremony that was really a kind of a dud last year. It was literally Commissioner Morgan in a cowboy hat. That's what it was. And it was.
Well, what we're trying to do is that basically a salute to our military with a
right.
parade through the Midway with,
right.
with some of the high school bands, you know,
yep.
getting them involved.
Color Guard.
The Patriot Guard. The
Young
Color
Marines,
Guard. And really create a military experience
mm-hmm.
that the veterans will be familiar with, feel special.
Yep.
And so it's not going to just be, you know, there's nothing going on. That initial first day is going to be a huge event all the way across.
Well, tell
the
other commissioners why we chose the military theme this year.
So the Southern Oregon National Guard is mm-hmm. going to be deploying this fall.
Mm-hmm.
So they've all gone on active 10, Title 10 active duty orders. So, you know, what really prompted the conversation is an opportunity to let our current soldiers know, and, you know, most of them are young, that, you know, the community's behind them and that, you know, we're here to support them as well. So, you know, that's really what prompted the conversation in the fair theme of taking it to veterans and encompassing them as a whole.
Would, because, and we have a general here now, excuse me.
Yeah, General.
Can I be recognized?
Yes.
Thank you.
I recognize you as Dan DeYoung. I don't know if you shaved your beard if I'd recognize you, but...
Yeah, you recognize me well. I'm not yielding yet, so anyway. But we have a general here from the National Guard. Would the National Guard be interested? I know they spend a ton of money on drag racing
yes.
and everything else. getting the National Guard name out there.
Yes.
Would there be an opportunity? Is there some sort of a grant we could put in with them, you know, for support of this? Say, this is our
sponsorship.
This is your event, and everything we're doing here is your event. Maybe they pick up Mr. Greenwood's act.
I don't know that they would necessarily have the budget to put something together like that big. Yeah. But I definitely plan on approaching them about, you know, because they can take it and, you know, through recruiting dollars and money that they have aside.
And one of the things that I think the investment, the key to, and one of the things I looked at in the investment, if we're going to invest in anything, how do you track it? Mm-hmm. And because we have taken numbers at the gate as to what our attendance in the fair is going to be,
yeah,
you'll know if these programs are successful by the end of the day at the clicker. You know, we got last year's numbers, and what do we do to get more numbers? You can't get more numbers unless you completely change what the fair looks like to the community. Now, we've got the momentum build up with the fair, and we're doing the arena, we're doing this, and we're going to do it. And once we get that momentum build up, you're going to see that at fair time. Mm-hmm. I just hope that we don't have the 105-degree day and the smoke. Even the 105-degree days aren't that bad anymore because we've got the cooling tents.
Yeah, we do have them.
The misters, yeah, and we've got in the commercial building, we've got those big fans that go in there.
There's five air-conditioned buildings.
Yes, it's five air-conditioned buildings. So I think this is definitely traceable. It's definitely tractable to say, did it work or did it not work?
Well,
and you find out.
And I guess one of the questions I'd have is last year we had a sponsorship of a day. And
that will be done as well.
And so I guess, so somebody's paying for all the entrance on a day. Or how does somebody show they're a veteran at the day that they're coming to the fair and they bring their DD-240s or whatever they're called?
DD-240.
Yeah, and
they get IDs.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm just kind of curious, but having the sponsorship, what was the impact on attendance that day compared to the other days? We say that the idea is that it'll bring veterans and their families, but we also have another whole day that's sponsored. So
we're not going to have a whole day that's sponsored. A sponsor of the day is actually not going to be free admission for that day. So that piece is going to change. What we're trying to shift is the sponsorship for the veterans in the active duty. Okay. So that piece will come in place. We'll still have sponsors, but they'll sponsor events or main entertainment or what will be happening on for the activities of that day. But as far as free admission, we're really trying to cover the veterans and the active.
So, Darren, does the city have any money through John Bowen that could come to some of that?
I'm sure that there's some available. It'd just be a matter of will and a matter of asking.
Requesting it.
I'll talk to John.
Yep. Or the tourism committee is also a place you can meet John and...
I've met John.
Right, a bunch of people that would be on your side.
Right.
That would help leverage. But, I don't know what the city's participation's been in the past.
I don't
probably
know that
zero.
They have,
It's a fair ask.
It's a fair question.
go ask Gail Atkins what her company wants to participate. I think
there's certain names that elicit a response, you know.
There's a couple of them he's thrown out so far today that there's been no.
You said something funny and you didn't even know it.
I didn't even know that. Anyway, I think the fair's on a momentum, mm-hmm. and I think anything to me that all of these things we're talking about is an investment, but it needs it should. Let's look for every opportunity. Yeah. I think you go to somebody and say, you know what, we're going to do the veterans thing, and this whole thing's tying together because we got Lee Greenwood coming, and that's it. Boy, you mentioned that, they go, what?
Yeah.
You just saw an advertisement last night during America's Got Talent. Mm-hmm. You know, the little girl that has a rabbit, and she's a ventriloquist. Mm-hmm. She's a highlighter for the Jackson County Fair this year.
Is she really?
Yeah, she's good.
I saw that last
night. Really good, but she is the highlighter for there. So, you know, they're already starting to advertise, and we can have a tendency to blow them away. Mm-hmm. We can really snuff them out.
They
always have this competition across here, us and Blackwell Hill. Mm-hmm. Let's just put our back into it.
Well, and I think that what you'll find is people will go both. you know, mm-hmm. if there's something that's a draw,
yeah.
people don't necessarily go, oh, I'm only going to go to the Jackson County Fair. No, they're going to go see the little girl at the puppet. I can't think of her
I've always right said now. That's where we need to be advertising. Yeah. You've got 230,000 people
absolutely.
less than 40 miles away.
They'll come here.
We really,
for the right
yeah,
point.
We really
they
need.
Will.
We really need yeah. them over here.
It's surprising yeah. how many people from Medford come to our fair because it's so different from Jackson
yeah.
County.
Yeah, it's hometown.
Yeah. That over and yeah. over.
There was yeah. many, a lot of people driving the little carts this year. There's a lot of folks, I've never been to the fair before. I said, well, let's just take him. We take the scenic route mm-hmm. down around the thing. I'll take you on the scenic route. And the big deal, I was there, was when the rodeo cowboys and the bulls, I always stopped mm-hmm. at the bullpen. I go pick up color. You know, there's one you want to root for, you know, and then yeah. the cowboys were there, you know, it's, yeah. that's a real cowboy right there.
Right.
You know, and Ed, you were Wranglers. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, just a little tour, but there was a lot of people said, you know, I've never been to the Josephine County Fair. This is really something.
Yeah.
And even with the smoke, they had a good time. All of them had a good time. Did you find that? You drove.
I had people last year just say that it was starting to move towards feeling like the old fair used to be and yeah. people more supportive of and such. So yeah. it's starting to gain that momentum that I think we can draw people back. The biggest frustrations I heard was around the concert and how that whole fencing was set up in the entrance that and then people had different bracelets for different sections, but nobody actually enforced where they sat.
Yeah.
And the sponsorship down below didn't allow people up towards the concert. So that was the most complaints I received that was...
Well, even the band, even Lone Star says, we want the people right up to the stage because yeah. that's important to them.
It feeds their energy
absolutely.
That
yes.
counters
absolutely.
Back. And so, but that was... And then, of course, the vendors... I had one saying, you know, how can you bring some people my way? Can you, you know, how do we get something going here? You know, so I think we'll get some more stuff going. It's just a matter of the smoke... Maybe kept some folks away. Some people were saying they wanted refunds. It's like, sorry, this is part of
the risk.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, like I said, some of that is going to go back down to the marketing, you know, getting people through to the vendors. And, you know, and I have ideas to address that once we get in there, getting them to all aspects of the fair. So they're not just walking in and turn around and walking out after the concert.
And it's an investment also because you've got people that say, I'm not coming back here again. And then you have a stellar event.
They'll come back.
And they go, boy, you missed it. They really hit this thing. Boy, this one was rocking.
Yeah.
And then they go, well, I guess I missed it this year. I'll be back next year. So yeah. it's, I've been in promotion with the motorcycles for years. And there's no, and Boatnik, especially Boatnik is just, boy, right. it's bizarre. What can happen there. And when we lost the Riverside, I thought that is going to be, everybody's, oh, that's it, that's the end of the Active Club. I said, it's the best thing that ever happened to the Active Club, getting kicked out of that motel. I guarantee it. You will rue the day you didn't get out of there earlier. And I said that. I was on my way out the door because I'd been there for 30 years. I said, you're going to be surprised how this thing grows now that we're not hooked to that motel over there.
Right.
And it did. Boy, it went, it just, it's blown up because of investor.
Right.
So, good deal. Let's make it happen.
Oh.
But the money's always a concern.
Always.
The money's, I think, a concern with all three of us.
And what's like a day sponsorship cost?
So, what we're trying to do is we're trying to make the it free admission for the entire fair.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just one day.
Right.
But typically, if somebody wanted to come in and be a day sponsor, it's going to be between $25,000 and $50,000.
Right.
So depending on what level they choose, if they're trying to add the admission aspect or they just want to come in and sponsor the event, you know, and do different elements. So there's a lot of flexibility in being able to tailor packages to what works mm-hmm. for a specific corporation.
Well, that might be a decent ask from the city is for a sponsorship day so they can get some bang for their buck as well.
Okay.
Would think the IBEW, the Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, could sponsor a day.
Never
the
know.
Union, the union.
I was non-union, so I don't know any of them.
Teachers union. Get the teachers union. Step up.
There you go.
Do something for your committee. Do something for your committee.
All right.
Pay attention.
There will be a definite outreach into the community and into the different businesses within the community. You know, a lot of it is going to be, you know, the structure and how we can structure it. The veterans aspect of it, though, is kind of the biggest piece as far as, you know, that's the piece that we really want to make sure that we cover so that we can move forward in that, that aspect.
City of Grants password.
And I can't start advertising it if I don't know if I'm having to charge people for
it or if it gets to be free. We need to get on this.
But it would be nice if each night we had a platinum sponsor that covered Veterans Think. Tonight, Veterans, you're being honored by Row Motors. Or tonight, Veterans, you're being honored by so-and-so. Mm-hmm. You know, and to give those businesses and the community the opportunity first to say, this is, we support you, Veterans. I mean, so...
Sounds good.
All right. We may have to follow up with you soon just to see. But
yes.
I can't say that we have $50,000 available yet to do that. So,
And I have chatted with Arthur just in generality, and he seemed to think that it would be something that would be doable if you guys were on board with it. So, you know, maybe some further conversations or things like that. So
Ryan has his money.
Yep.
We're good to go.
I can retire in a year.
not my
No.
Okay. Get that arena roof on. That's all.
All right. Thank you. Anything
thank
else?
You.
Great. I don't think so.
No, appreciate it. We'll see you Wednesday.
Yes. What? Okay. Actually, you'll see me at 2:00.
Sure. Yeah, real quickly. Yeah, we're just about done here. Okay. I just thought of a minute. Are we about done?
Hey, Brian.
I need to
Brian, so review fair board advisory minutes. We have them in our packet. I did read through them. Uh-huh.
I read through them, and I didn't see anything that really jumped out at me. A lot of it's ancient history. You know,
right.
It's all from, they're all from 18.
Part of it, they are all from 18. Part of it is us just kind of getting an idea of what happened last year.
Right.
So I would just recommend Darren and I read through. I'll get them signed as soon as I can.
Yeah. Yep.
And we can go from there. Any liaison reports?
No, other than that.
No.
We've had a busy couple of weeks, so I mean it's.
We have.
So, and we've got another one coming up.
We do. I'm
out of here on Thursday.
Should we move on to additional subject matters for commissioners?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Go ahead, sir.
Okay, I'm out of here on Thursday to go to ONC, and I would like to do that. Let's see how the tail end of goal setting.
Okay. I would like.
I have to go to Salem on that day for ONC.
What time does the meeting start?
Meeting starts up there at 5, I think, 5:30, 6 o'clock, somewhere like that. It's usually kind of an evening meeting, and then the next day. I really don't have to go to the Thursday evening meeting if I don't want to, but they get a lot of, it's more of a workshop type thing. We get a lot of, really a lot done on Thursday that we don't do at the regular meeting. That's the build-up for the meeting on Friday. So
the biggest thing that I'm going to ask to be on your plate for that is the Oregon Wildlands Act.
Okay.
There's a 57-mile extension of the Rogue Wild and Scenic designation, which will basically take it the rest of the way.
And
it's mostly BLM, so that's going to impact ONC lands.
Right.
And so if you would be willing to find out as much as you can, I know that it's on our general discussion, or our legal counsel discussion this afternoon, but it's already passed the Senate, it's going to the House. And reaching out to Walden's office, they're recommending we're getting a hold of DeFazio and talking to him as one of the co-authors and such. So we need to be actively engaged in that. The goal setting is supposed to go till about 4 on Thursday. Okay. It'll get out. It won't go as long as 5. It'll get out probably a little early. But
just be aware that I'll be all packed and ready to go. Mm-hmm. It'll be just a matter of stepping in the truck and going. But I just need to, it's 3 hours up there.
Mm-hmm.
But everything's right at the Grand, so you know if I get there, I don't have to drive somewhere else.
You
know, the whole meeting and everything be at the hotel. So, okay, that was all I had.
Darren,
We had a threat assessment guy at County College. He used to work for the state Supreme Court office and. Worked on threat assessment at all the courts around the state and just reminded me that we need to get that on our radar for this building. I don't know what form it's going to take, but I know that this building is not set up to be safe for public access or for a
court security.
Active shooter or anything else. Mm-hmm. And so we need to eventually talk about what we're going to do. Are we going to do anything? Are we going to wait for the new courthouse? Are we going to make this one safer, make one entrance? Because there's people standing out here in the foyer that don't belong here.
That's
daily.
It's public building, so I know, it's
but
open.
It's,
and
it all
cannot
it takes
be
is
restricted.
One bad actor.
I hear you.
And so.
So as far as threat assessment, on Thursday I spoke with Lieutenant Vincent from the jail, mm-hmm. Because he's the one who is staffing the court security folks right now. So we're talking about just options for the building and such. It's one of the things that was on my list to talk about, because Thursday afternoon at 3:30 is a court security meeting. I said that we're going to be tied up at the over there until 4, and said we'd try to get there as soon as somebody would get there as soon as possible. So it sounds like Dan's not able to go. I'm willing to go, but I didn't know who.
Where's that for?
Court security.
Okay.
Last year we'd made it, you know, just kind of a commitment that one of us would try to be there. But the DOJ also does those. Mm-hmm. And so Vincent was going to reach out to contact we have at the DOJ about making recommendations.
Yeah.
Because there's a whole bunch to
there
that.
There are grants for that, I'm sure.
Potentially. Yeah. The other thing is just, and then any recommendations, what do we do with that? But yeah. One of the things that we faced is, in a public building, what do you restrict access to? It's part of why we have concierge here. It's part of why we have some of those conversations. So, but just Thursday, I talked to Lieutenant Vincent about, and he was going to reach out to DOJ to see.
So that's this Thursday at what time?
3:30.
Yeah. And our goal setting would almost be over?
Correct.
Right? Yeah, and yes, I'm sure I could make it, yes.
Well, one of us can, and this is part of this discussion about overall plan of what goes where, what happens mm-hmm. when. For this building, if the courts want a single access point, where's the best location for that? And, I mean, Ryan and I have had a lot of conversations. I mean, I know we've had, and it's like, what is ideal, you know? And we talked about not messing with the front half of the building and keeping the historic look of that. But I remember last year going to the Library of Congress, and you go up at the top floor to look in down across the thing, and they got shatterproof, glassproof, thick stuff straight across, so you can see through, but you can't access and get through, or you know, and all that kind of stuff. So what's the right answer? And mm-hmm. it's part of why we're doing Wednesday and Thursday. What are all these things we need to be aware of in that bigger? What's that next plan?
Yeah.
And with that, what does it trigger? If this moves, what's the domino effect of these? So.
Okay, along that subject, we talked about, Arthur and I were talking the other day, about increasing, getting a hold of concierge to see if they can handle court security. They can't? Why not? I knew there'd be a reason why not.
It's not in their contract right now.
Okay. But I told them to call Julie and find out, and then I could find that out.
So that's...
I'm asking a question.
No, I hear you, but in their current contract, they're not allowed upstairs.
Oh, I know. I understand.
So we would have to amend that contract, but it also would have to be in a deal with the sheriff's office.
Right.
That would...
I just was asking. I want to open that conversation. Okay?
Okay.
Because rather than us do a whole bunch of stuff that it costs us, maybe concierge could take care. That's number one. Number two is I did go give a presentation on House Bill 2382 to Jackson County, and they opted out.
Okay.
They're listening to Danny Jordan. Danny Jordan said he had a whole host of reasons why not, but he only gave one, and that was that using his formula, which was the formula in the act itself, that's being changed and amended as we speak. He used the act said a percentage of all monies. Well, he considers carryover from one year to the next as money, as revenue. And it should have read a percentage of property taxes collected in that year, not all revenue, because they had a pretty good size carryover that year, so that put them at 17%, not 30%+. But this is my own personal observation, Danny Jordan was not interested in this in any way, shape, or form. On camera, Rick Dyer said that it was brought to his attention that the growers would go to the black market. His concern was the growers go to the black market, or that their growers would move out of Jackson County, and they didn't want that. And that, I thought to myself, that's not really probably what your people want, but that's okay. Because I know you throw that out there that, you know, you either get legal or get out of Josephine County, and most people would say, I just want them gone because I don't want them next to me again. So, but anyway, I'm trying to get clarification on what Danny Jordan, what his host of reasons was. But I just assured them, I said, you know, when we amend this, unless there's changes from your commissioners, we will just opt you out. We will opt you out. Myself and David Brocksmith, we've had long conversations over the weekend. We've been working on this various things all weekend. I said, David, whatever. And, of course, legislators talk amongst themselves, and they don't talk to us. So he's got a couple of ideas how this thing can be tweaked and possibility of getting it through. As you saw the other day, the governor wrote down that number again. And as you say, with court security and whatnot, that's another thing that the Supreme Court ought to be looking at, is this is one of the things that's addressed in our Law Enforcement Stability Act is court security. Because that can be drawn out of public safety. Law enforcement is court security. Parks Rangers are court security. Code enforcement is court security. All of those things are really hot ticket items at the legislature up there. So I was over there. I had, there was three or four people from the marijuana industry that, of course, followed me out, cornered me before I went in, blah, 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 blah. I said, okay, if not this, what? Well, and this guy followed me out. He goes, there's $720 million that the governor's sitting on in marijuana tax revenue that she's not telling you about. I said, where did you hear that? And he said, it was on Good Morning America just this morning. I said, Good Morning America, that's where I get all my stuff. I said, but I don't think that's true, but what would you think we should do? He says, all the county commissioners need to go together and walk right into that governor's office and tell her to redo the formula, giving that money back out. And I said, so I would have agreed to that before the first disbursement check went out. You're never going to get that turned around because the schools are going to be all over you at 40%. State cops are going to be all over you at 15%. And Multnomah County and Washington County are going to be all over you because they're not going to give up a percentage of what they've already received so that Josephine County can be whole again. We need to do this down here or we don't. And so we talked over a bunch of things, and he followed me all the way out to my pickup, trying to intimidate me, and I said, well, that isn't going to work. So and then I got in the truck and left. But I had two interviews on TV, and both of them right afterwards. I did not throw Jackson County and their commissioners under the bus, which it would have been real easy to do, but I didn't because I honor and value their opinion. But one of the things I did say is that I'm going to ride this horse till the shoes come off. This thing is not dead by any means, way, shape, or form up in the legislature. And David Brocksmith and I are committed, but Rob Bobette, we're all committed to follow this thing through. We do have hearings, so that's where we're going to go. So that's where we're at.
Based on time.
Contrary to whatever you hear.
Okay. Based on time, I'm going to forego anything.
I took up the whole thing. No, one more real quick one. We toured Wolf Creek Inn the other day in your absence, and we kind of didn't halfway, but we kind of more or less talked about a commitment for us to do a meeting up there. Mm-hmm. And basically what we'll do is we'll film it there. We don't need to broadcast it from there. We'll film it there and then we'll put it on. When we get back here, we'll send it out on our website. But the guy at the Wolf Creek Inn was quite excited about that. He thought that would be a really good idea. He's got a place where we can be, and we think it'll accommodate the amount of people because it's got an extra room off of that. Where the little fireplace thing is. So if we can do that, our March meeting, what did we figure, Trish?
I think it was May.
May, yes. It was the May meeting up there, be an evening meeting. We kicked around an idea. Dennis Dixon was there with us, and he said, you know, maybe after the meeting we have like a meet and greet out on the patio and serve some food of some sort for the people that come to the meeting. You know, just kind of a real lighthearted thing.
All right. With that, we're going to be adjourned at 11:33.
Thank you.